This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling, indies, and international. I'm Pete, and I'm back with Timothy. Timothy, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going pretty good. I had a rough week of no internet. That's why we missed the last episode. I actually even mentioned it on Burning Spirits because I was able to get on there just this week. It just came out the other day. Internet was down. Took them about a week to come and fix it. When they came out to fix it, the guy tells me that the cable that I was connected to wasn't properly flagged to say that it was going to someone who was actually paying for service. So when they set up business internet on an office building that recently opened next door to us, that's a marijuana dispensary, they knocked us offline to give them business class internet service. So that was really cool. And then I asked, well, okay, can we move it over? Because when the guy initially installed us here, he said I had to use this cable that's not really in the best spot. Can I move it over to the other side of the living room? It'll be better for me. It's right next to the entertainment system, blah, blah, blah. He goes, oh, yeah, let me look into it. I'll see if I can set that up for you. Midway through doing everything, he goes, oh, this one's been connected the whole time. So I could have just moved the router and everything over to the other side if I had wanted to, but I was told when they set up the internet in my house that that one wasn't working. So, yeah, that was a bit of a headache, but we're all back, you know, back to reality now. So I'm doing good. How you been, Pete?
Hey, not bad, not bad. So you went to Bola, right? One of the nights?
I went to night three of Bola. It feels like it was years ago at this point, even though it's basically been about 2 weeks. Biggest takeaway, I would say, well, actually, everything was, you know, done, paced really well. Did a great job making Jeff Cobb believable by the end. Did a great job making Keith Lee, who was kind of my pick going into the thing, look really believable into the end. And then having Ricochet come out with the win made a big deal, made him look like a star, being, you know, the smaller guy in the match, the smallest guy in the match, showed off some great power moves. The other big takeaway was the comedy 10-man tag. It really came back to reality somewhat, not as ridiculous as it's been in past. The comedy was based more around, you know, wrestling tropes and comedy, not kind of making fun of wrestling a little bit too over the top with, you know, slow motion and bullshit like that. The comedy was really based around everybody on Trevor Lee's team not really being a big fan of Trevor, and Chuck Taylor kind of doing his normal goofing around. It wasn't over the top. There was a really great interaction where Walter and Jonah Rock start just hammering each other, even though they're on the same team. So that got me excited. I'd love to see those two have a singles match, but, it was a lot of fun. It was a return to form. It may have helped me personally because I only went to one night. I only went to the last night, so I wasn't all drained having gone to the two previous nights. But realistically, it felt like one of the best nights of Bola that I've been to in a long time. I mean, the matches blew by. Nothing was over the top. Everything was a lot of fun.
How did Sammy look?
Oh, Sammy. Oh, man. So what I heard is his match with Janela on night two was the best match of the night. I'd love to see it to really make that decision, because I'm hearing that from Dave Meltzer types and people who I don't necessarily know if I completely buy into their opinion on it. But I could definitely see some other people told me that who I do trust, so I could see it being good. But the match with Jeff Cobb on night three, quick, super quick, but really got over Sammy. I loved hearing Meltzer's review of it, because his review is a couple lines. Oh, this was a fast match where they barely did anything, but it was still good. Sammy did some flips off the stage. And I was like, that wasn't the point. The point of the match, it did get to show off that Sammy can do flips, but he's done flips in every match. But this match, it focused in on Sammy's character. He was cocky. He was brash. He did the squats even with Cobb on his shoulders, which was hella impressive. Like, to me, I was like, oh, this was great, because even though it was quick, they still got over Sammy's character. They got heat on Sammy and made you kind of realize who he was. So I just thought it was funny. It really shows the difference between my opinion of wrestling and Meltzer's opinion of wrestling, that for him it was, oh, this was a quick match, but Sammy still got to do some flips. And in my mind it was, oh, this was a quick match, but Sammy was still able to show off his cocky heel character and really get over to the crowd in that regard.
Because this is like, seems like this is like Sammy's kind of breakout year. I mean, he's done Bola. I mean, he's done some PWG. He's, you know, profiled on Wrestle Circus, showed up on TNA, he pops up in Mexico. I think he's heading into a Japan tour.
Yeah, he's
and
there
I
now.
Actually think this is like, yeah, and I actually think this is like one of his worst years because we haven't gotten a chance. He seems like he's more concerned about his flips and dives than about his character work. Like, it is like his character work to me is taking a second. Taking a secondary seat this year to work rate, and I think it's hurt his matches overall. I mean, from what I've seen, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I could definitely see that 100%, and it probably has to do with where he's going. He's trying to get return booking, so he's trying to impress. It's a lot different than when he's in the Texas Indies, because what he's trying to do is get return fans. He's trying to work matches that get the fans excited to come back before, and now he's trying to impress the bookers so that they'll bring him back. So it's a different game, you know. It's unfortunate, because I think he is a guy who could do well at the top of a card in a company where he gets to sink his teeth in with his character work, as opposed to doing this. But I mean, it's unfortunately just the devil that we have in current day wrestling. People are more excited, again, as I talked about Meltzer, people are more excited about what flips did he do off the stage than they are about, you know, what did he show as being a fucking asshole, and essentially letting his cockiness be the counterbalance. I mean, he was in the match with Jeff Cobb, where you would think, you know, Jeff Cobb could just crush this kid because he's so big and also fast and agile. But Sammy was showing that he was able to out-wrestle Jeff Cobb, but he was too busy being a cocky little prick to stay focused on the match, and that's what cost him. And I was just like, that's a great storytelling device that makes Sammy look super strong, but also it really gets over his character, you know? So I think I get what you're saying, but I think he's probably feeling more comfortable, especially after so much buzz from his match with Janela. I think going into night three, he was probably saying, just as I said, let's not worry about getting these return bookings, because it seems like this place loves me. Let's worry about getting some return fans. Let's worry about getting some people excited about my matches, which is going to be good if he does continue that going forward in PWG. And from what I heard, you know, he walked up to Meltzer on night two and said to him that, you know, I'm the best in the world. And this is outside of the, you know, the context of the wrestling. He's just telling Meltzer flat out that he's the best in the world. So, I mean, yeah, I think he was pretty comfortable in PWG by the end of Bola Weekend.
Wow, nice. What else was I going to say? What about Sammy? Where was I going with this? God, I can't believe I can't remember where the hell I was going to go with this. Oh, yeah, okay. Speaking of Meltzer and Ricochet, have you watched that Meltzer with some of the Boulder crew on High Spots?
I did not watch it, but I listened to it. So, yeah, I heard it.
So you heard Ricochet taking a shot at Sammy, huh?
Yeah, I did, actually. That was pretty interesting. I don't know why he felt the need to do that, but you know.
Yeah, totally buried him on the thing, not even there. I mean, told him that boy pretty much said that Sammy was trying to do too much, huh?
Yeah, I know, and it's
which is pretty rich. Well, you can say that about a lot of people in Bola and PWG, and he picks out Sammy Guevara.
It is. It's also interesting because, yeah, I mean, Keith Lee. I would say Keith Lee and Donovan Dijak did 1,000 times more than Sammy did, but, you know.
Oh, you saw that match live, right?
Yeah.
Was it the greatest match ever? Like, I mean, was it that good of a match? I mean, Meltzer gave it 5 stars.
I mean, I said that I liked their match in Wrestle Circus more.
Okay.
I thought that it was probably slightly better than the Beyond match. I didn't watch both of the NEW matches, so I don't know there. I'd say it's definitely better than their Evolve match. I think, did they even have 2 Evolve matches? I think so. So I would say it was probably like their second or third best match between those guys. So I wouldn't say it's the best match ever. And I definitely wouldn't give it 5 stars. I thought it was great. I mean, they did a really phenomenal job. It really added to the suspense of the match that you could hear the ring breaking apart in the middle of the match, which is something that I talked about. I mean, obviously there is the case that the EWF ring truck caught on fire and they've been using a different ring. And then that's when kind of they've been having a lot of trouble with rings. But I think another part of it is, as people have talked about, that, you know, oh, everyone's in love with the Hosses now and everyone's going back to liking big guys. And especially on the indies, there's a lot of big guys. I think a lot of these companies were running with these rings on the indies that were okay for all the little tiny guys on the indies, but now that we're getting more and more big boys, these rings are not able to hold up to it. So I think we're now starting to see that some of these indie rings are shittier than people realized.
Yeah, when I saw that Meltzer gave it 5 stars, and of course I didn't see it, I like both workers, right? But I just find it hard to believe. I just think they have too many flaws in their game to throw a 5-star match. I mean, I know they can do a lot of cool athletic stuff, but yeah, I just can't imagine it being as great as Dave. I think just Dave just drank the Kool-Aid, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even kind of shit on him for that match, giving it such a high rating, because the crowd was definitely bought into everything. So you could almost say, too, if you're basing it not just on what they did, but crowd reaction and if they really got the most out of the crowd that they could, I could definitely see giving it. There was some nice, honestly, there was some interesting story stuff with them having been tag team partners the night before. They worked that into it in a way that I could definitely see as being slightly funny, but you could also see it as working to add some drama to the match. So if, especially Meltzer, if you hadn't seen them before and you got caught up in the moment being there live, I could definitely see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
But I was there live too, and I wouldn't give it 5 stars.
Yeah, I think you have 0 5-star matches this year, right?
Or what? I don't think I have any. I'm like kind of debating. I'm going back and forth on the Dunn versus Bate from NXT. Takeover, like I don't think it's 5 stars, but yeah, I don't have any 5 stars this year, but that's like the closest.
I have one, and I mean Meltzer just seems like he throws them out like fucking chiclets sometimes, like bubblegum, like pennies. There's just so many things that can keep a match from hitting 5 stars, and it's interesting. I think there's plenty of great wrestling, but I don't think it's like this new freaking thing where there's like so, like there's like five. I mean, it seems like with Dave, there's like a new 5-star match every month, and I just can't buy that. I think psychology is such an important thing, and again, I think there's a lack of psychology in some aspects and stuff. Because I think Keith Lee and Donovan Dijak could do a hell of a lot less in their matches and have better matches. Sometimes I think those guys actually do too much, you know?
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. And again, I could definitely.
I mean, they're great live, and I love both guys, and I love watching them live. But yeah, sometimes I'm like, man, why don't you just slow it down and actually have a real Hoss fight, you know? Because they'll go into doing Hoss fights and they're doing lucha spots, and I mean it's incredible. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, sometimes I mean they can slow it down and take less bumps and don't affect their body, but what have you? I was supposed to go to a River RCW show in San Antonio, and I was going to go because Ricky Steamboat was going to be in town. But he canceled because of what happened in Florida. He wanted to be by his family. And I got to give RCW credit, man. The day before I was supposed to head out, I got an email telling me that Steamboat had canceled and that they're offering refunds. And I got my refund within like 3 days. So a lot of indie show promotions wouldn't do that, I don't think. And so I got my ticket back and my and whatever gimmick I was going to buy. So I want to give a kudos to them. Did you ever get your refund back on that one show?
I got my money back from PayPal. I didn't get my money back from the promoter, but I did get my money back.
So you had to go after it, right?
Yep.
Honest.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I got to give RCW credit. They've rescheduled him for January, so that's cool. But yeah, I mean, so I think I want to put them over as being a real honest promotion and that ilk. But hey, let's get on to some actual wrestling that we both have seen. And the other reason why I didn't go was the main event wasn't really piquing my interest, which was EC3 versus Abyss in a street fight. I just not my cup of tea. Maybe they had a great match. I don't know. But to me, it wasn't worth heading out to San Antonio, and the main reason I was going was for Steamboat. And I'm like, oh, and cool, a wrestling show, but without Steamboat there, I didn't feel like going out, especially because I'm not an EC3 guy. At times, I've seen him have good matches, but he's not the type of guy who I know is going to work his ass off on an indie show. And Abyss, you know, Abyss, I mean, they might have had a fun match, but I think I made the right decision getting my refund. But hey, we go, and we're going to be talking some SCI right now, Scenic City Invitational, night 1 and 2. I, of course, was there live, and I watched it back on tape, and some of my star ratings changed, which I found interesting. You know, again, there's so many different things on a live perspective versus watching it on tape. But overall, man, what do you think of the show overall on night one?
Night one, I think especially, was done really well. Focusing on the tournament matches was good. I think, unfortunately, it took a few matches before the gravity of the tournament really felt like it was part of a big part of the show, which, you know, kind of slightly affected my opinion on some of the matches, some of the first few matches there. But I think as it rolled on, it built. I think they did a fantastic job of building the importance. I just think that there could have been felt a little bit more important earlier on, but they definitely did a great job by the end having it feel like the tournament was a big deal.
Yeah. I thought one of the best things is I felt it was a consistent show. I felt it flew by. It didn't overstay its welcome at all. I thought the booking was very well done. I thought they protected the finishers, and they protected people, not protecting people, but they just had real cut and dry finishes. Nothing. They didn't overspam anything. They didn't, like, you know, kick out of 5 fucking Death Valley drivers, or, you know, kick out of finishers. When they get a finish, you should lose, and that's what happened. I felt they did with the less is more approach, and I thought they did a good job in protecting a lot of those type of things and stuff. How did you think about the booking and stuff?
Yeah, I think the overall booking and quality of the matches was toned down without feeling like it was under-delivering, so I definitely agree with you on that. And I do think that everything was, they did a good job of not burning out the crowd by doing too much before you got to the main events.
Yeah, and you got to remember they're running 2 nights, so night 1 isn't about always having this, like, blow away show, because you've gone to Bola a few times, and they really know how to burn a crowd out, and I know they stay hot. But I mean, a lot of times, I mean, you'd hear stories back in the 80s how Vince would run the building late to burn the crowd out for the next night when NWA would come to town or Crockett would come to town. And so it's crucial to have a good, fun show, but leave enough on the table where people want more, and you don't burn out your crowd for your night 2 either, you know? So booking a tournament, 2-night, 2-day tournament, is a lot more trickier than people give it credit for, you know?
Yeah, and I think that Bola was really, again, a comparison was really interesting this year because, having it been switched to 3 nights more regularly, they've really kind of jettisoned the idea of not burning out the crowd for the first 2 nights, and especially this year, the 3rd night, it seemed like they went out of their way to book the 3rd night more like this 2nd night, or more like SCI's 1st night, in that it was like the 3rd night was built in a way that it went by fast and wouldn't burn you out. And you're like, well, maybe you should have done that on the first few nights instead of waiting to the last night to not burn everybody out.
Yeah, exactly. And we open up with Matt Lynch versus Joey Lynch. It was a battle of the brothers. I gave it 2.5 stars, which I think I had that on live. I liked the handshake headlock opening spot. Mirror spots early to make sense for brothers. But I felt they could have done a little bit more familiarity spots. And I really didn't think Matt did a great job getting Joey over, because I felt they could have done more. It kind of felt a little flat, the match, at times. I mean, it wasn't a bad match, but knowing the familiarity of these guys, you thought they could have really had a really super fun match, and it kind of missed the mark a little bit. But I still thought it was a good, solid opener. What about you?
Yeah, and I do wonder, I mean, how how they put this together, because it did. I agree with you. I think that this should have been a bigger showcase for Matt, as the crowd is already pretty much into and familiar with Joey. I mean, I guess a big portion of the crowd probably knows Matt pretty well, but I think that on the SCI big stage, they should have done a little bit more to kind of get Matt over. There was some good back and forth striking.
I don't think they need to get Matt over, but I mean, knowing that Joey's going to be end up, I mean, the booking had him in the final two in the tournament. It felt like he needed a more stronger win and stuff, or, you know, just a better match. I don't know what it was. I just felt he needed to get put over a little stronger.
Okay. I mean, I think that it would have helped him if his opponent had looked better. I think.
Yeah, that too.
Win over more in the end. But I get what you're saying. I thought that the kind of botched pin attempt on the Canadian Destroyer affected the match for me somewhat, because it looked like the ref counted to three, but also Matt Lynch's shoulders were very clearly not on the mat as the way that he was positioned. So I think, you know, the referee waves that off and doesn't go for it. So that affected it somewhat for me as well. That said, I'm with you. I gave it 2.5 stars. I think the guys did a solid job, but again, it's two different schools of thought. It's opening up the show with a match. I honestly even think that they were going for the opposite, which is they were going for a hot opener, and I just think it under-delivered in that regard.
Yeah, I can see that. Then we got Jason Kincaid versus Torque. And this is a match I actually like better on tape than I liked it live than live. What were your thoughts?
I didn't see it live, so I can't see
right,
it.
Yeah, honestly. Right, yeah, right.
But I agree with you in that I liked it. I thought this was a good showcase for Torque. It showed off his high flying ability. I think that you have a great wrestler in Jason Kincaid to counterbalance that, because I think he's considered, you know, a big deal flying guy, especially with a lot of his super unique offense. So when he can let a lesser known flyer get a chance to shine like this, I think it really helps. It's honestly, I'd liken it to Ricochet versus Desmond Xavier, which happened both in AAW and on the Bola show that I was at. That like it can really help a younger flyer to have a really good showing against a guy who's a established flyer. But the great thing about Kincaid is that he's also got a lot of unique and interesting offense in other ways: cradle attempts, counters, kind of quick grabs, things that are just a little bit almost kind of cheeky European style Johnny Saint spots at times that are kind of, you know, within his own. They're not actual spots from Johnny Saint, but they have that same air of kind of clever quickness that I like. And so showing that off and using that experience that he has to get the advantage on Torque, I think, again, it's a good way to help get Torque over, establish, okay, this guy's a good flyer, this guy's a world-class level flyer, but he can't compare to Jason Kincaid when it comes to cunning, experience, and all that. That said, I came out of it 2.75 star. And again, this is where I'm saying, you know, the first couple of matches, while they're good, they don't feel like they're putting a lot of importance into the concept of this being a big, important tournament.
I enjoyed it more. Again, like I said, I'm more like, I watched it better. I liked it more on tape. I thought the mat work was fun early on. Kincaid, of course, has some innovative spots. I really liked Torque underneath, and I really liked the layout of the bout, because we got a good defined shine and heat segments. And I enjoyed it. I gave it 3 stars, which is, I think I had it at 2.5 or 2.75 live, but on tape, I enjoyed it more. I got more into Torque on tape than I did live. Then next up, we got Dominic Greeny versus Eric Royal, the ace. Again, both guys who I loved. And honestly, at first on live, I thought this was the best match, night one. I changed my mind on tape. Live, I gave it 3.75 stars. Here, I gave it 3.5. I thought Dom was over huge here. I liked the early grappling from both guys. I loved Dom working the arm, was unique. Dom's submissions are really unique looking. I thought Eric, the ace, a royal, sells the arm really well. I absolutely loved the finish, but I think, and it happened to be that happened on my side of the ring, that I think only one side of the ring actually saw Eric Royal eye-rake Dominic Greeny, because they didn't really play it up on commentary at all. I don't think, I think because Eric Roy blocked and blinded it so well that I don't think the other three sides of the ring actually saw him cheat. So all they saw was Space Jam at the finish. And I thought the eye rake was really subtle. I thought it was great. But again, I think it only hit one side of the crowd, which is the side I was on. So I saw it and it was blatant. But I think he camouflaged it so well that I don't think most of the audience picked up on it. Still, I gave it 3.5 stars. Still liked it a lot. What are your thoughts?
I'm similarly there with you. I liked it quite a bit. I thought this was the first match that, again, really felt like it had an air of importance when it comes to the tournament itself. I loved it feeling like a Clash of the Titans. Esque kind of feel with Royal being a big brute force and Dominic being this high level technician. Really enjoyed as you talk about Cecil or the commentary, Cecil Scott on commentary pointing out the flying triangle being this perfect confluence of both grappling and flying that is the two weaknesses of Eric Royal when it comes to wrestling. I thought that's just textbook phenomenal commentary right there. I mean, you're putting stuff together that really tells a deeper narrative about the interplay between the two guys' weaknesses and strengths. And I just thought that was great. Again, as you talked about Eric Royal with the eye gouge, I'm happy that it got caught well on tape, especially, hearing from you that it probably wasn't seen as well live from the crowd. I thought that Royal just puts Dom into orbit with that big tackle. It's always super impressive when he does that, but even more so when he's able to send a guy as big as Dom into the air like that. I gave it 3.25 star. I up until this point, I thought it was easily the best match on the show. Watching everything back on, watching everything on tape here, I'd say it could probably even still be the best match if it's not the second best match on the show for me. I thought that both these guys really meshed well together.
Yeah, then that leads us to Joey Janela versus Darby Allin, which a lot of people thought was match of the night. What are your thoughts?
I wouldn't necessarily, call it match of the night for me, but I think that Darby Allin did a great job showing off him being more than just a kind of spot monkey, for lack of a better term. He definitely was, he showed that he had some fundamentals. It's interesting how much lucha style he was able to work here, knowing his background, being, trained by the late great Buddy Wayne, the Portland Buddy Wayne, which also, I guess, is involved with Brian Alvarez in some ways. So Brian Alvarez did have a hybrid gymnast kind of lucha style, but he was bringing some lucha stuff that I would not have expected from a guy that was trained by Buddy Wayne, which I really enjoyed quite a bit throughout the match, or throughout the opening of the match. Then, of course, it breaks down into just wild craziness. You got Janela bringing in chairs, just insane spots, everything. Knowing that, knowing a little bit of the background here and, what everything that was out in the open, obviously, knowing that Janela was going the next night to wrestle Leo Rush, which in what ended up, I think, being Leo Rush's last match for CZW, at least, which was kind of a home for him, kind of does, when you know that, it does kind of make sense why it was that they wanted to announce it and wanted to kind of ruin the suspense of was he going to make it to the second night of SCI. Just because, to give that send-off to Leo Rush in CZW that way, with a guy who really helped him make his name in CZW. So, but yeah, knowing that, it was super impressive that Janela was so willing to go all out. The guy did the same thing at Bola, got himself instantly over. People like me were already questioning why he wasn't already being booked in PWG. People not like me who didn't know who he was by the end of the weekend were begging for him to come back more. When it came to the 10-man tag, he was the most over guy. So there's just something. Leo Rush has just got a love for the business and a passion for the business that comes through in spades. Janela, yeah, I'm sorry. I said Rush, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joey Janela. His passion for the business and his kind of commitment to giving the fans everything comes through in everything he does. Coming out of the match, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Again, I wouldn't say it's the best match on the show. I gave it 3 stars, thought that they did a great job, got the crowd into everything, cool spots, everything like that. But I think, it was a little haphazard, and you have the commentary having to try to cover up why they would be allowing so much leeway in a no DQ match. And, you knew what to expect here. But I could have used, you know, maybe just say, hey, yeah, sure, this is the tournament, but we're officially making it no DQ, and then I could have maybe accepted it a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I liked it. I gave it 3 3/4, just as much as I saw it live. Again, with the chairs, the ref needs to kick those damn chairs out. He can't let them just sit there in the ring. It's just lazy refereeing, and that hurt the match for me. I loved Janela setting up the arm work, and I liked Janela working the arm. I thought Darby was spectacular with the taped hands. I got to give Dylan Hales credit. His bump was tremendous in this when he eats the punch. I thought it was fantastic. The chair shots in front of the ref kept it from going to 4 stars for me. It's kind of like the same thing. I had the same problem, like even in like New Japan when Okada and Evil were doing the same thing, you know? Those are disqualifications. They, you just, especially what also hurts it is that they had the backup match if these guys got disqualification. So, disqualified. So they actually had that, you know, when they could have done with those guys, they could have done the elimination match, or they had that as a you know, another thing what could happen, and here they were blatantly should have been disqualified. I just hated that. It's not just here, but I mean, it bothers me everywhere when I see someone hitting somebody with a chair in front of the ref. I mean, it's just lazy storytelling. But I thought everything else was awesome. I thought it was action packed match, 3 3/4, and I liked a lot of the psychology of the match. And at Janela live, he just has this unique charisma that not many people can come close to. It's just really cool to see live. And I wasn't a huge Janela mark before. I mean, I liked him when I saw him in Orlando last year. But seeing him here, I was really, really doubly impressed watching him and watching him here and then at SUP, the following night. I mean, 2 nights later, just great stuff. What you make of, then we got a Jason Cade versus Curt Stallion. I gave this 3 1/4. I thought Stallion's strikes looked nasty. And I think live I gave this 3 stars. I thought Cade did a pretty good job healing it up. Cade is cocky heel, focusing on the back, was well done. Cade threw this really nasty looking elbow. I like Stallion just, you know, taking an ass kicking and then making his comeback. Overall, I thought Stallion worked underneath really well here. I've had aspects of problems, and later on I'll talk about other of his comebacks. I don't have no problem with his selling. My problem a lot of time is with his comeback, where it feels like, and it's the same problem I've mentioned with Kenny Omega, where he's getting his ass kicked and all of a sudden he's in fifth gear already without having to build up to it. Instead of a gradual climb to it, he just immediately shrugs it off and makes his comeback, and I have a problem with that. Here, not so much. I didn't have that big of a problem. I thought they did a good job, and I thought they did Cade psychology of doing cheating moves behind the back, not doing a high spot to get a negative reaction. I thought he did all this stuff really well, and I really like Cade here. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I agree with you for the most part. I did like the kind of narrative of the start. Cade not just going off the bat with big dives. Takes some big chops, and you know, then from there he's like pissed off enough and into it that he's going to start doing the big risks of his body to work him over. I did like that Stallion is working on the mat and commentary is putting that over, saying, you know, that he's doing well on the mat. I agree with you. I think that the comebacks come a bit out of nowhere and abrupt. It affects the match for me, in a big way, honestly. I did like, Stallion cutting off a big dive with an up kick. I thought that that looked good. And then set up for Cade with the one count kick out. They have to have that in there, especially in a Kurt Stallion match. But I do think that Kurt Stallion's kind of a Torpedo Moscow as his big finisher. The diving headbutt looks good. I gave it 2 3/4 stars. I thought, again, similar to you, I think that this is an issue with Stallion. I think he's really good. I think that maybe some people have inflated his ego a little bit more, and he's not really seeing kind of the deficiencies that he needs to step up. But maybe he does. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think that a lot of his matches just need a little bit more substance. I think that's his biggest issue right now.
Yeah.
Me
and Johnny P and I are having the same discussion at Scenic City, where we're not seeing him as a top, like I've heard some people say he's in their top 10 wrestler of the year, and I just can't buy that at all.
Yeah, no, I think he's good. I think he has a lot of potential. I just think that he needs to, yeah, just maybe slow down a little and focus, get a little bit more emotion out of everything that he's doing. You can't judge everything on, you know, on his match here with Cade, because Cade is also
right
in that same boat in some ways, so... but like I said, still a really good match from both guys. And these are the kind of tournament first round fill out matches where you got young lions going at it that do help add some credibility to the tournament. You know, these guys are wrestling like this is a big deal. And realistically, it is getting to the finals, even possibly getting a win in a big showcase like this. You know, obviously it's wrestling, so it's predetermined who's going to win. But it's still a big deal to get that that showcase. So, you know, that kind of, these kind of matches do help put that, kind of reinforce that in your head.
Yep. Next up, we got Gunnar Miller versus Shane Marks. What were your thoughts here?
I like that they, you know, they both are showing off their power, but Miller's explosiveness is just too much for Marks, who's a big man with speed and agility on his side. Feels like Gunnar is really outclassing Marks the whole way through, pretty much the entire match. Marks hits a couple of, you know, high spots here and there to make sure that you still see that he's in the match. He's not just getting beat, which I think is good. I like Gunnar kind of throwing him around, really battering the shit out of Marks. I think this does well to really make Gunnar look strong. I do think it's interesting, not just on our podcast here, but other podcasts. Dylan was pushing this as this could be the upset match. And then when it really comes down to it, this match was built around Marks really just selling and bumping around and hitting a few high spots to make Gunnar look really good coming out of it, as he gets just destroyed with the CTE and put down pretty easily. That said, I think, again, this was pretty quick. This almost felt like a slightly upscale squash match. So I gave it 2.5 stars.
Live, I felt it was like 2.5, but on tape, I gave it 3 stars. Live, Gunnar has this like persona about him. Even as a heel, Gunner's explosive spots or get over. Gunner's cutoffs, I thought, have been pretty explosive here. Love Gunner's forearm shots here. I thought Shane Marks had a good punch and sold real well. And that's what we needed to see here. And this match was about making Gunner look good. And I thought they did a good job. And they laid it out, you know, working around his limitations of what he has. I mean, he's getting better and better. But I still think he needs to, like, come up with some more. He has some really cool spots, but I think he needs to come up with some more bread and butter type spots that are, you know, not token spots like the spear or a jackhammer, but something to eat some time away. Like, come up with some ways to work an arm that makes it look interesting, or leg or something that makes it look hurtful and painful or what have you. But for straight up explosive spots, he's pretty damn over with them. Then we got Gary J versus Anthony Henry. On tape, I thought this was the best match of the night. I thought the strikes from both guys are nasty. I loved Gary J's strikes. Like, they're just amazing looking, sounding. Powerbomb by Henry onto the guardrail. Gary J reverses Henry's around the world spot. I loved it. Loved how Gary J is focusing on the neck. Henry's reverse revenge spot with a neck breaker was swank. Much more back and forth and less heat shine. than a lot of the matches, but here it stood out and worked when you protect it. Because in the most part, there was a lot of heat and shine segments, but here was a lot more back and forth, and you're able to get away with it if you protect it, protect this type of style. Because this is like the predominant style on the indies, real more back and forth. So if you build it, if you only have it doing it once, the style gets over so much better. And I felt it did here. And like I felt the big strike exchange was really built well. Good stuff. Four stars for me. I really, back on tape, I really love this. What do you think?
I think I'm not quite as high on it as you. I did really enjoy it. I was at 3.5 for this. I expected from these guys, I would have expected a wild start, with just, you know, big bombs and dives and all that. But instead, they kind of worked, just a little bit in the ring and then go out for some walk and brawl. I think maybe if I was, you know, had the experience of seeing that live, I would have appreciated it more. We've talked about it. Walk and brawl is a pretty big pet peeve for me. I think it definitely works live. I'm not going to lie and say that, you know, when I'm there seeing it, I don't enjoy it. I thought that Gary J's double stomp on the apron just looked killer. I thought that it was interesting. Gary J just looked like he had Henry's number for long periods of time. He had counters to counters. He was hitting everything he had. Henry would just do some cutoff, you know, big lariat counter, and it feels like Henry just kind of takes over. Again, you talk about, you know, needing to build up to your comeback. I feel like Anthony Henry really has two speeds when it comes to that, and no in between. I mean, he's either got super indie, go, 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 there's no kind of connective tissue, or he's got, like, we saw that really great Kyle Matthews match to me where he really has a lot of kind of psychology and storytelling to the matches. That said, I thought that the finish, when they did get into that wild forearm strike off, like you said, normally those can annoy me, but the crowd got super into it. It was done with a lot of heat, a lot of passion, a lot of aggression. So it definitely really worked here. I thought that, yeah, the finishing stretch with the double stomp and Gary J won't stay down, penalty kick still won't stay down, just keeps going for him, finally just has to put him down with the stretch plum. I thought that was done really well. Like I said, 3.5 stars, good action, probably in the conversation for me for the best match of the night, probably, again, 2 or 3 range. I think I might have kind of a tie when it comes to the best match. This would probably be, as I think about it, probably be tied.
Fair enough. What do you think about it? I thought Gary J got over more than almost everybody in the tournament. To me, the guys who felt like got really over, I mean, Gunner was already over, Riddle's Riddle, and Tank's Tank. But then I felt guys who grabbed the brass ring and really seized it, I felt Gary J was the guy. I felt him and Dominic were the guys who grabbed the brass ring the most.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd say right underneath that you have like Torque and Janela, who I think did a good job of getting the crowd into them. But I think, yeah, for sure, I think that there's probably an argument for Gary J even above Dominic as being the guy who really made the most out of what he had. I think he's lucky because he had probably the best matchup for himself to do that in. I think that him and Anthony Henry with his history in SCI and their kind of skill sets matching up was pretty much perfect. And I think even the match was placed in the perfect spot on the card as well, leading as the semi-main event and really being, in some ways, you could even say, like, expected to be the work rate main event just because of what the main event was here. I definitely agree with you. He didn't shit the bed. One of the best performances I've seen from Gary J, because I'm not a big fan of his, and I haven't been a big fan of his. But coming out of this, I definitely could see why other people are super into him. I know you've seen a lot more of him, being that he does shows in Texas, so you were probably higher on him than me going into this.
But I've been high on the guy since 2000. I've seen him live. I think the first time I'm live maybe it was 2010. Yeah. I mean, so I've seen him quite a bit for like at least 7 years, and I thought he's working face, but he was one hell of a heel here in Texas earlier in his career in Texas. Always brings it, always works hard. I've always been a big fan of his. And I was thinking, I always thought promoters could do more with him. And then that leads us to the main event of, and you also got to admit, I mean, Stallion got over, don't get me wrong. I thought this crowd was more of a, this was a Stallion crowd, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Where they're, I think they were totally into him. What do you think of Riddle versus Tank?
This would be my tie for match of the night match, honestly. And I'm not even a big Riddle guy. I also had this at 3.25, or 3.5, sorry. I liked the brawling. Again, this is the match where everything came to a head and you felt like you were in something that was super important. You know, obviously they start with Brock and Brawl, but Tank is just, he comes across dangerous. Even on tape, to me, when he's out in the crowd, it feels like anything can happen. You know, he's just destroying Riddle. Riddle is going for arm bars, different counters when he can, you know, trying to grab, you know, holds and whatever he can. But Tank is almost like an unstoppable force. He's just so big and so strong and so dangerous. He keeps coming. I love Tank biting Riddle's toes. That was just fucking amazing.
And gross.
Yeah, super, just perfect, honestly. Yeah, this feels like a big fight. This feels like this is real deal. And then I think it plays into Riddle's character. It plays into everything to have really, you could almost say an anticlimactic finish in that it's just that leaping KO knee strike that Riddle has won pretty big matches with in general. But I think that putting, you know, people might have expected big bomb after big bomb, huge kickouts, hot finish leading to the finish. But no, big leaping knee strike. He's out and, you know, Tank's career is over. And that's an emotional moment. And a lot of this, again, predicated on feeling, on kind of the aura, and also on the emotion of it being Tank's last match for me, makes this feel like a big deal.
No, I totally agree. I gave it 3.5 also, and that was just what I gave it also live. And live, it had a super, you know, emotional feeling in the building. Again, I thought the opening 30 seconds where you thought Tank might pull it off was tremendous. I thought that was the best 30 seconds of wrestling. Opening 30 seconds of a match I can think of and can see this year blew the roof off the place. I thought... in this match, Riddle probably hit his best Pele kick, and that meaning because Tank sold it the best and made it look good. I've seen Riddle throw some shitty looking Pele kicks, and here it was easily his best one he's ever done that I've seen. I thought it was a really good match, a lot of great action, and emotional. I mean, that's what wrestling's about, is that emotional hook, and it really did it here. I didn't know going in. I really wasn't buying into this match, but man, seeing it live and then on tape, it far exceeded my expectations, and I thought it was about as good as a match. Tank, it was awesome. It was a great way for Tank to go out. If anybody would want to have a great match like this to end their career, I thought this was perfect for Tank, and Riddle worked with him in a great way. Because you wouldn't call Tank super athletic, as in being able to do all these super high moves. But, man, they made everything they do credible and mean something. It's fantastic work from both guys.
Yeah, and as much as I loved, like, Tank's kind of deathmatch retirement tour with guys like Matt Tremont Cannonball, and then the Righteous Jesse from SUP and all that. Like, as much as I enjoyed that stuff, I do think that for his final match, I think it was important that he went out with a guy that you could see as cutting edge, state of the art, modern wrestling, and not deathmatch, because it does give you that. Well, even towards the end, he could hold his own with, you know, what's considered one of the best right now at non-deathmatch wrestling. No, not necessary for a bunch of gimmicks to hide it. He was still, you know, he went out when he was not completely broken down, you know, which is good for his kind of credibility and his legacy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, I'd have to say night one was a thumbs up for me. I thought the show flowed really well, and I thought it built to the big matches really well too. What about you?
Yeah, it felt like that they really set the table for, like I said, there was kind of the work rate main event and then the emotional main event. Not to say that the Riddle Tank match didn't have good work rate, because it did, but just to say, like, from really what the matches were presented as. And I think that that was that did a really good job being set up by the undercard. The undercard matches didn't disappoint. They all delivered pretty strongly. So, yeah, easy thumbs up for the first night.
Yep. And that moves us into night two. And we open up with Dominic Granini and Corey Hollis. And I loved how Hollis is builds himself from Full Sail, gets easy heat. Still don't understand Dominic losing here since he got into the tournament as an alternate. So him losing both his matches kind of makes it look undeserving. Hopefully they have another plan going on going forward. I love Hollis's cheap shots. He kind of reminds me of like this redneck version of Tully Blanchard. I love Hollis after the foot. Dominic selling the leg was well done. I love the low blow by Hollis, and I love this match, which I hope we get it. We get it again, again, and again, and this time they give him like 14 minutes as opposed to like the four they got here. But from a psychology standpoint, this was about as good as a like wrestling psychology wrestling match as you can get with great action. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, very similar feeling. I gave it 2 3/4. I don't remember. What did you give it?
I didn't. I was just too short.
Okay.
I mean, if I was going to get rated, I'd give it 3 stars because I thought it was really good.
Right. That's kind of where I'm at. I just think it was a little short and not in a put down way, but it was, you know, it was kind of Southern wrestling from Hollis. And I think that's part of it, too, is that I think he kind of can talk them into, yeah, I'll get the win, but it'll be cheap. So, you know, that's it. It won't take any heat off of Dom. And I agree with you that, like, maybe he should have. Dom should have won a match on the weekend, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
He's coming in as a young alternate, so I can see maybe you think he's disposable, but I don't know. Yeah, I love Hollis's heel work. I think he does a great job. I thought Dominic looked good here, too. I mean, we can also go based off of the Dominic versus Kane match from CWF, that having him lose that first match really didn't hurt him when he came back for the rematch that really, you know, looked super good. So I could definitely see them going further with this. I think... both guys are just, you know, both of these guys are two of my kind of favorites right now. So I enjoyed the match quite a bit.
Yeah, what do you think of Tough Guy Inc. versus the, I can't remember who the tag team
the Movement.
They wrestled. The Movement, yeah. Who what do you think of this?
I didn't think that the Movement looked great. They were a little sloppy, blew some spots. I think Tough Guy Inc. plays their sticks super well. My only problem would just be that I don't know about opening up a tournament show with two non-tournament matches like this, kind of back-to-back. You haven't even, like, given the... Excuse me. You haven't even had a chance to, like, start the tournament here, so I don't know why you open up with two non-tournament, especially a tag match like this. I think that this could have been used, you know, they could have done a better job. This is where the second night, I think the booking didn't flow as well as the first night. Honestly, that said, this was a lot of fun, but as a comic relief match, I think you probably should have had it somewhere later in the card as I say, as comic relief, instead of, you know, early on. But as I said, I like Tough Guy Inc. I think that they work their gimmick well, have some cool spots. I gave this 2 stars, mostly just because Tough Guy Inc. has a lot of, charisma. They get over really well, but I think that the Movement, they just didn't look great to me here.
Yeah, I liked. I give it 2.5. I thought it was solid comedy with tag structure. Felt it went a little too long. I kind of dug because Tough Guys Inc. Entrance was a lot longer live than what they showed on tape. So I love the fact that they cut it, which says because all the other entrances are pretty quick. Get in, go up to the steps. Here, Tough Guy Inc. went out. It felt like they went out of. They did it. I felt like they, I don't know, took advantage because I don't want to use that as the right word because what's his name? Who are the two wrestlers of Tough Guys Inc.?
Tim Hughes and, Bob Evans.
Bob Evans. I think Bob Evans was doing a seminar, and it felt like because he was doing the seminar, he felt maybe he was. Big League or whatever, or because he has ties to Ring of Honor that he can kind of piss off the backstage. I'm not sure, but the live they had a lot bigger entrance, and you know what? Why should the team that's not in the tournament, it was just an undercard match, get the most elaborate entrance of everybody on the show. That's just Bush League shit from Tough Guy Inc. But they did stand out live because of it. They did it, but it should never be an undercard team doing it. Good solid tag though. Next up was Gunner versus Matt Riddle. This match is getting a lot of hype, a lot of love. What were your thoughts here?
I could definitely see why it would get a lot of love. It was a great kind of sprinty match. I love the kind of, you know, counter or like, yeah, like two different sides of a similar kind of wrestling type. With Gunner comes out, he's super intense, Rattle's chill, hard hitting, fast paced action. Love the superplex, but then that leads into the jackhammer, one of those kind of over the top spots. Riddle obviously gets the crowd up for everything he does. They're super big into him. I think there's nothing not to love about this match. Big action. Very interesting having Miller not make it to the finals after winning last year. But I guess, you know, you can't always, you know, have the winner go all the way to the finals 2 years in a row or whatever. So 3.5 stars. I liked this quite a bit. I thought that they did a great job. And moving forward, Riddle seems like he's collecting all the big scalps. He puts Tank out, he beats last year's winner, and now he's going into the finals. You figure he's got to be winning it coming out of this.
I love this. Live, I gave it 4.5. On tape, I gave it 4.25. Super heated, off the charts, two studs colliding, and I thought it was great how it was all about Gunner selling a lot of the match and making great comebacks, and his comebacks are awesome because the moves are so explosive. Really great stuff, and a long arching storyline. I want to see these guys tussle again, I'll tell you that. And it was like two just stud athletes, and I don't think Gunner really runs into too many people. And same with Riddle, who are on both guys. They're at their athletic type of peaks, and I think they really respected each other because of that. Just a badass match. Then we got Eric Royal versus Curt Stallion. What were your thoughts?
I thought that they were having a big time fight here. Love Royal is just, you know, jumping on Curt from the start. Kurt's selling is, you talked about it, his selling is really great. Honestly, that's some of the best part of Curt Stallion is his underdog selling. You know, the way that Royal can cut off comebacks is perfect. And you talk about, you know, Stallion not kind of building up to his comebacks. Royal really seemed to make sure that he, you know, earns his comebacks here, the way that he can cut him off, set him up, more sympathy. Stallion keeps trying to fight out as much as he can, but the big man's just putting him down. I love Stallion comes back with the big headbutts. Eventually he's hit like a top rope German suplex or like reverse Spanish fly kind of thing. I don't even know what it was supposed to be because he flipped with Royal. He didn't just like throw him. He actually took the full flip off the top with him. Loved the action here. As I said, I think that Royal really worked with his style to help fill in the deficits in Curt Stallion's game to bring him up to his level and really make a match that has big drama. Felt super important. I gave this 3.25. And yeah, the night two, if you're going just the tournament matches, is off to like a rip roaring start for me when it comes to in-ring action. I mean, these matches are already like at the level or surpassing some of the better matches from night one.
Yeah, I didn't like it as much as you. I gave it 2.75. I liked the Royal bullying Stallion. I like Stallion's big dive. I love Royal just working the crowd. He's great at it. But I hated Stallion's no-sell comeback. It was just, again, just made it, he came out of nowhere where instead of like slowly building to it, it just was like, oh, okay, my turn. Fifth gear. I loved Royal's cutoffs. And I think Stallion's headbutts are the best in the business. I think it's like freaking nasty, and I wouldn't want to get hit with one because it looks bloody nasty. But Stallion's offense is so credible. But yeah, I just had a problem with that in the Hulk Cups. It's like, man, just Let it be. It just doesn't seem real organic at times for me. And that leads us to Joey Lynch with Jason Kincaid. Fun match. Again, Kincaid's offense is so unique. I thought Kincaid's coast-to-coast was freaking pretty impressive. 3.25 star. Really good stuff, though. What are your thoughts?
Similarly with you, I think, a good job showing off Joey Lynch's kind of striking and this felt like almost like a All Japan Juniors match. They're working some high flying, some striking, some not really a lot of throws and kind of suplexes and stuff, but I think they were working that kind of, it's just a fast paced heavyweight match with some flying as well as those like big strikes. I thought that the heel work, I wish that there had been, maybe Kincaid had gone a little bit heel here, because I think that he works really well as a heel. It's kind of interesting, his current character. We'll get into it a little bit more in CWF. I don't necessarily know how much I'm into it now with the kind of peace-loving thing that they're trying to pull with him. But yeah, I think that it would have been nice to have had that so that you can move forward with Lynch going into the finals as the very clear underdog face. Here, having a face-versus-face match, I don't think... while they worked that match well, I think it didn't help with the narrative of the tournament as much. I gave it 3.25 star. Thought that both guys, were really good here. But I think it could have just used a little bit more focus when it came to narrative of the tournament overall.
Yeah, that leads us to Darby Allin and Anthony Henry. I liked this match. Gave it 3.5. I liked the early struggle to the mat work. Henry after the arm, pretty unique stuff. The blown spot was ugly, though, where you saw Henry get caught up in the ropes. He panicked a little. He definitely was looking for a save. None wasn't there. And yeah, so it was a pretty ugly blown spot. But it didn't really take anything away from me. And I absolutely loved the finish of the match. A 3.5 star match. What about you?
I think that affected, that kind of affected a little bit more for me. Again, I do always get a little bit taken aback because I don't think of Anthony Henry as a heel when he works like very obviously like heelish, especially in this setting. But I think Darby Allin did pretty well as the underdog babyface. The crowd got into his comeback really well. The Code Red looked cool. I think that stuff like, Henry with like rolling through the suplex into the slingshot Falcon Arrow. Again, it's that over-the-top Davey Richards stuff. But I thought the armbar, the bell lock finish looked good. But that said, I thought, the botched spot and I don't know how to put it exactly, but that and a couple other things just kind of annoyed me to where it didn't get too high marks for me. I gave it 3 stars.
What did you make of this scramble match?
I also gave it 3 stars. I thought that they did a good job. It was good for like a mix of the guys getting their shine, getting their pace in there when they could. I liked Matthews getting the win. I think that that could help, putting him back into the tournament hopefully next year. Because I think he would be a guy who can bring a lot to the tournament. I think that Matthews was seemingly kind of trying to keep the connective story to the match, but there really didn't seem like there was much. I always like Kevin Koo. I'm actually really into him. Didn't really get much out of Congo here. Gary J looked good, but yeah, I thought again, it was, it's kind of spotty. It had some narrative, but not as much as you would like. And I think it definitely was a good showcase for a lot of the guys in the match.
Yeah, I didn't like it as much as you. I gave it 2 stars, but I felt it was so much better on tape than live. Live, it looked like a complete cluster, while on tape, it had a lot more focus to it. But it's just one of those matches that it didn't really need to be there. 2 stars. And that leads us to the Carnies versus the Hierarchy. And do you remember, did they have the tank going away thing here, or was it after the Carnies thing?
I think it was before.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think they changed the way the card was laid out on night 2 on tape than it was on night one. Because on night one, we went from the tank thing right to the main event. And so all this other stuff was underneath it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they changed it up a little because it didn't flow real well naturally live. And so they changed up, and maybe it flows better on tape. I'm not 100% sure. I didn't redo the tank thing because I already watched it live. So I really didn't need to go through that again. But I thought this Carney's Hierarchy street fight was really well done. Again, I'd never seen a fireball before. Super fun brawl. Love the shot of Iggy in the balcony. 3.5 stars. And I thought Stutzy on commentary. It was just, I know it wasn't done on purpose, but he mentions, I wonder where Nick Iggy is. And all of a sudden you see from the camera panning away, Nick Iggy's up in the balcony. The timing could not have been done more better. Couldn't be done more perfect than how they did it. And it was just an organic moment as opposed to these guys trying to time it out. It was so great. It was awesome. I got it was a good 3.5 star match. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I also had it at 3.5 stars. I thought they did a great job of selling a wild, out of control brawl. I think both teams had really great looks. They kind of look like, you know, units that are cohesive and fit together in a lot of ways. They really, yeah, like I said, it felt like a war was going on here, with everyone just going all out on each other. The Force Destroyer off the top rope was insane. Earthquake Splash onto Amor on the chairs was nuts. Yeah, the Nick Iggy balcony dive obviously is just super cool. Getting Slade Porter involved, but you know, that not leading to the finish, I thought was interesting. And then, yeah, I just get the finish, and it's Adrian Amor taking the cheap pin with his feet on the ropes. Sure, it's no DQ, but still doesn't have to end like that. I thought was pretty good, especially knowing kind of or watching the build up to the match with the Facebook shooters with Kerry Offal and Adrian Amor getting into each other on Facebook when this match was initially announced. It's nice to have them figure into the finish against each other here, playing off that kind of drama that was happening on social media. So yeah, I thought that this served its purpose really well. But again, I know they want to give a show. They want to give the crowd a show, but I mean, I could have used this being like the showcase non-tournament match of the night and not really having so much of the other non-tournament matches, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I'm a firm believer where I felt like they could have done, you know, I think they could have done this match and I would have done the scramble because they needed it. But I definitely wanted to see Dominic and Hollis, but I felt, they could have done a little less, but, you know, maybe, but, you know, they're probably saving these other guys for a longer main event. So it's tough. Balance it out. What'd you make of the main event?
The main event, I liked it, but I think that the last 2 years were
both better.
Better, and I hate to put it on, but I think it was probably because Jimmy Rave was helping put them together in a more cohesive way. If that makes sense.
Oh yeah, this is a straight up spot fest.
Yeah, and I think that it really was lacking.
It is the big move spot fest. Yeah, it lacked a creative. I don't want to say creative, but it lacked a certain psychology. Wasn't big. It was more of like, look at all the cool shit we do, and look how hard we can hit each other. I will say the booking protecting it because they didn't have too much no selling bullshit throughout the tournament. They saved it all for one match, so they protected all these big moves here. So booking wise, they protected it, but I mean some of the stuff was, again, it was just egregious. You know, the rolling German nine, you know, no sell type bullshit.
Yeah.
But what were your thoughts?
No, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the thoughts. I think I liked the teasing in the beginning of the storyline with them kind of almost acting as if they were tagged. There was tag teams tagging in and out and kind of protecting the matchups. But yeah, then it really just breaks down into a four-way Supposed to be tags, but essentially there's just wild spots and everyone's in the ring constantly. They're all going for big dives. Like, I just, I think that they were teasing that they were going to have that psychology, and then it just kind of fell apart. Again, I think a big part of it has to be Jimmy Rave missing. I think he was bringing a lot of psychology to these matches, really putting them together in a cohesive way. And this just didn't have it. There was obviously some really, really good spots towards the end. I think with, you know, Kurt Stallion, maybe even you could say Joey Lynch, Matt Riddle, and Anthony Henry, when he's in that mood, I think that these guys, though, maybe might have been even more exposed if they had tried to add a lot of drama instead of just doing the spot fests in the four-way. So maybe that helps. I don't know. Maybe that was just the way that they had to go with these guys. But that said, I think that they did a good job. I think having Riddle win wouldn't have been my choice, but from, you know, the reports that I received from within the building, and you were there as well, it sounded like the crowd was into him, was into it, felt like him winning it definitely brought an air of importance to the tournament instead of just being another local guy winning it, which I personally find counterintuitive, but I guess that's just kind of how the crowd felt. So it was a good call. That said, lots of great action, 3¾ star, but I felt coming out of it just slightly, I guess just it under-delivered compared to past years.
Fair enough. I enjoyed it. I liked it enough. We gave it 3.5 style, but I hated the strike battle. It was a spot fest. And again, I thought the booking protected it really well by having the one spot fest late in the show. Loved Henry taking down Lynch when he was waiting to hit him. I enjoyed that. I liked them taking it back to the norm. I thought the belly to belly over the head, the guardrail was sick. The damn German suplex spamming is ridiculous. And I'm not a big fucking fan of the Canadian Destroyer spamming either, because finishers were preserved so well. That pop when Lynch got the kick out after the Gotch pile driver, the place exploded, and that's because they protected the finishers so well in the tournament up to this point, where they weren't kicking out of finishers. Thus, when he hit the Gotch pile driver, the crowd went nuts when they kicked out. So if you protect it well enough, you're able to do it, but don't do it to prostitute. Overall, good match, but way too spotty for me, and so I gave it 3.5 stars. Again, though, I thought Scenic City Night 2 was a great show.
I completely agree with that. I thought that the Night 2, the Night 1 and Night 2 combined, everything was really well done. I appreciated the shows quite a bit. I guess I just kind of worry that it did feel like a departure from the past 2 years, and I just hope that that doesn't continue too much more. I liked Scenic City because it felt like something different from a lot of the other tournaments, and I don't want it to, and I don't think it will, but I just hope that it doesn't start to feel like just another indie super tournament.
I don't think it will, because I think that what they're doing is they're just laying the groundwork. And the more years they do, the more history get to play with. Because right now they're in their infancy; they're what, 3 years into it now.
Yeah.
So they don't have enough history to really play with, where everyone will remember certain spots, unless you're like a Scenic City loyalist. Because like I was hearing stuff, I'm like, oh, I didn't even remember that spot from last year, because I haven't seen the Scenic City tournament from last year and since. Last year on tape, you know what I'm saying? Right. I didn't go revisit it a ton of times. So it's just one of those things where you can kind of remember, forget about certain spots that meant a lot from last year, but you just don't remember it because it's not. But maybe 5-6 years from now, when it has even more credibility, you'll remember certain spots they did and get more cachet out of it. But yeah, easily a great, great show. And I'm glad I went live and glad I already watched it. On that note, why don't we take a break, and then we'll come right back and we'll be looking at some CWF Mid-Atlantic.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back and we're looking at CWF Worldwide, CWF Mid-Atlantic. And that brings it up, man. That's right. October 13th and 14th. I mean, October 13th and 14th. No, yes. Is CWF FanCon. It's coming. It's the CWF Mid-Atlantic Rumble. This year, Trevor Lee is going to be defending his title in the Rumble. And I got to admit, at first, when I heard this, I was a little disappointed because I went out because I'm going. And I wanted to see a classic Trevor Lee title defense. But the more I think about it, the more I'm selling myself on this because I trust Stutzy and I trust Grant being able to tell one epic story here. With all the history Trevor Lee has in the territory, and it's like what we're talking about with Scenic City, where it's only been now 3 years, in the 3 years, and now they're running a couple more shows each year, and so they're being able to build on that history. Here, they have the history of Trevor Lee and his growing up in the territory, and I mean, there's just so many great moments. I mean, there's going to be could be so many great booking moments and ideas here. And so many, because I know Grant and Brad are going to give it to us in a great storytelling. They're going to do great visual storytelling. I have the utmost confidence in these guys. So now I'm all in on this after I thought about it. And, I mean, we could see Brad Attitude, Eric Royal, on a 2-on-1 against Trevor Lee at some point. We could see somebody turning. We could see a nemesis from Trevor Lee's past we haven't seen in years. Does Brad Attitude get his ultimate revenge? Does Nick Richards stand by his friend or does he turn heel on him? Does Trevor Lee stand tall and not turn on the incumbent Nick Richards? I mean, there's just so many storyline elements they can play with. Does Andrew Everett come back? You know, again, there's just so much going on here. And this has, like, so much. It's so ripe for storyline potential. It's up there, like, when Flair first entered his first Rumble. And he had the history of the former kingpin of the NWA and wrestling against guys he wrestled in the NWA and then new people he hasn't wrestled, like with the Hulkster and Randy Savage. But then you had all the those like the who's who he's wrestled in his past was in the Rumble. And you know, and they did a great job of that. And then they could, you know, talk about Flair's history. You know, he had history with Greg Valentine, Kerry Von Erich, And it goes on and on and on. And so I feel like they could do the same thing here with Trevor Lee, where it's just ripe. I mean, ripe with storyline potential. The storyline. These guys take the Rumble serious. I can't wait. But yeah, FanCon, 13th and 14th. It's Friday and Saturday. And it's going to be incredible. I'm going to be out there. We've already got our tickets. Front row, baby, VIP. We got our room already rented. We are ready. So go follow CWF FanCon on Twitter if you want to know more about CWF FanCon being hosted by Johnny P and JB. And I'm telling you, man, follow there. See all what we're going to be doing. There's going to be some tape watching. There's going to be a buffet. There's going to be catered meals. Going to be some drinking, and of course there's going to be some great wrestling. So come on down, CW FanCon, October 13th and 14th. Incredible stuff. But hey, we're going to cover two CWFs right now. And listen, it opened up with Jason Kincaid versus Chip Day. What'd you make of this one, Timothy?
Great action from both guys. Kincaid working over the arm is some good stuff, especially because it doesn't impede Chip Day's ability to throw those kicks later on in the match, which is a big part of his game. I think Kincaid here, this is where he's working this character I was talking about earlier, the peace-loving pacifist wrestler. I don't know how I feel about it. I think if anybody could pull it off, it's Kincaid, but I think even still for him, it's a difficult... it's a difficult character to make work, especially kind of here trying to play a little bit heelish. I liked it. I liked the finish with the sneaky roll-up. I'm definitely kind of into watching this Kincaid title run playing out on CWF. I'm enjoying it. So yeah, I liked this match quite a bit.
Yeah, so I gave it 3 stars. I liked Chip after the leg. I liked Day going back to the leg. Overall, I thought it was a fun bout. Where they just tease us a little bit here, where you know they have a better match in them. But here's a nice little, kind of like a, hey, look, this is our house show, touring house show match. But, man, wait till you the pay-per-view where we can really tear it up. I feel these guys have it in them. Kane comes out, and he's talking a little trash to him, which leads to a Kane Justice versus Dirty Daddy match. And I like Kane coming out. And talking some smack to those boys, and it elevates Kane by being in the same ring with Kincaid, and Day and Kane have a little history, so I really like that, and I'm always for a mark for a guy coming out and running into each other on the entrance and exits of matches, but it leads us to Kane versus Dirty Daddy, and I love this match. Daddy posts him. Love Dirty headbutting the arm. Kane really starts to destroy the arm. Kane just raised the stakes in arm work because it went from Daddy working the arm really nice, but now Kane takes it to the gutter and just nasty arm work. I love the escalation here. I like Kane's 360 bump in the match. Daddy throws his nasty knee. That was just really nasty. This has a real personal feel. Like, these are guys who did train together, but now they fucking hate each other, and I liked it. Love the commentating, touching on the history of the guys. Kane's knee to the ground and pound, I bought as a total finish, but they didn't go there. Twist ending, that Kane holds on to longer than he really needs to. Loved it. Personal feel. It built and built the escalation. You really got the vibe. These guys didn't like each other. Worked exactly how you're supposed to have a, when you guys have a grudge match, that's what it's supposed to feel like, man. Escalation growing. These guys are young kids who get it, man. Good job from both guys. Kane continues to impress, and I mean, God, he's so damn good, so young. It's amazing to see where he's come from in the last year, you know, just freaking great stuff. What'd you make of it, man?
Same. I mean, I'm with you on everything you said there. These guys show... I mean, Dirty Daddy, obviously, early on, I did not appreciate just how good he is at his character work here. But Kane is just almost on another planet when it comes to being someone so young, so good, getting the little wrinkles, the storytelling, the interaction, like you talked about beforehand. He's just, he's like, it reminds me of the Kevin Owens in NXT right before he went up to the main roster. He's essentially part of a feud with everybody. Just his shitty attitude, his shitty personality pisses everybody off to where he's essentially feuding with the entire roster.
Yeah, he's a total douchebag. He got a, he's a heel's heel. Hell yeah.
Yeah, everyone fucking hates him, no matter what. And then, yeah, going through into the match, him and Dirty Daddy just have such great chemistry together. Lovable babyface, hateable heel, great arm work, great selling, fiery babyface with big shots, big punches, big dives, big strikes, everything he can, you know, bring in. So yeah, I thought, again, I'm with you. Love this match. Probably like 3 3/4. These guys are just electric in the ring together.
Yeah, you know, it's something that a lot of guys don't get is how to build a grudge match and how it make you feel personal. And that's what these guys did. I mean, you see some of these guys are supposed to have be in blood feuds, and it's almost laughable, you know, on how they work the match. Yeah, sure, it's like still a great match in like from the outside looking in, but if you really look at it, you guys are supposed to be hating each other, and you're working goddamn high spots. Here, you get the feel these guys don't like each other. And you know what? They weren't a bunch of freaking dives and this and that. These guys punched each other in the mush. They hurt each other's arm. I mean, that freaking knee to the ground and pound was freaking nasty. And everything escalated and built and built and built. And guess what? It was built on, I don't hate you. I don't like you, you motherfucker. And it was how you need to build, man. And a lot of kids... I mean, these guys are young guys coming out and understanding how to work a feud. I mean, it's different. Working a feud and working a match are two different things. And they just did a great job. I can't put it over enough about working a match versus working a feud. And then we get this elimination match or one fall to an elimination with Eric Royal, Bo Crockett, Mike Mars, Mecca, and Biggs and Snooty Fox. What'd you feel about this?
Yeah, this is a big Hoss Man, beefy boy six pack challenge, I guess, with one elimination, one pin for the finish. I thought that they worked everything around the big man spots, especially focusing on teasing Mech versus Biggs, kind of finally locking it up. I think that kind of was the glue, that was the story narrative of the entire match that really helped, and it did also help because it sets up for Mecha Mercenary getting the win coming out of it. Probably, I wouldn't say the weak link of the team, but the guy that you wouldn't expect in the big singles matches out of the Sandwich Squad team, so I think that helped having them tease their faces off and then having him get the win coming out of it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Like I said, everyone used their size, kind of made everything seem really important, and it was just like a big old monster mash.
Yeah, I liked it too. But doesn't it feel like the setup here for Trevor Lee, doesn't this feel more like Trevor Lee should be a heel here than the babyface champ? Like, you get like this feels like the heel champ doesn't face a fresh opponent type of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's an interesting spot to put Trevor in. I think that they switch Trevor back and forth somewhat from heel to face, depending on who he's against. And I think that he can do a good job of it. But I think here fighting the big blown up Mecha Mercenary doesn't necessarily make him look like a big valiant babyface champion, especially as you then go into the match. And in the match itself, I mean, Trevor is overconfident to start because he's fighting the guy, but then he does start to sell. He's fighting off the back foot a lot as Mech is putting his weight on him. So I could definitely see where you're coming from, because it does affect for me the appreciation of the narrative of the story. But I think it also can, you could actually also say it plays into the finish. You know, hard fought match for Trevor. He was getting worked over by the bigger man, and then finally he gets the win with the that crossbody counter, which is, I think, actually probably the perfect win, you know, finishing move for him to use against Mecha, because it's just so impressive for him to be able to do that move on a guy that size, even if normally it's kind of just a transition spot. Here, it being the finish makes sense because it's such a big man to do that move to. And it also plays into the fact that Mecha had had a match before. So something like that that normally wouldn't put a guy away could easily put him away because he's just so blown up.
Yeah, the one thing I'm more nervous sometimes with Trevor is they're walking a fine line with the guy. I mean, yeah, he's a babyface, but he sometimes comes across like a little asshole at times. And like you know, when you have Brad Attitude, when you see Trevor clearly showed up drunk to his fucking wedding, you know, a little heelish. And then it was a little heelish here, you know. So maybe in the grand scheme of things, that's their long game of just turning him heel. I don't know. But it's better watch out if you plan on keeping him face, because there's some cracks in his baby face armor here. Been showing up, and it happens here. I like Mecha using his size in here. I liked him tossing Lee around. Loved Lee targeting the arm. Lee's shit talking was a bit heelish here, though. I felt because Mecha's such a likable baby face. He's that lovable monster, and with Lee shit talking him again, it's that fine line. I love Lee targeting the arm. Lee's hope spots or submissions were awesome here. Lee using the triangle to set up the legwork was good. Big moment was when Mecha misses him and turns the tide. Lee's burst of offense was awesome. Great structured match. I thought the layout here was fantastic. I gave it 4 stars. I thought it was another awesome, awesome match, man. And Trevor Lee just continues to deliver in singles matches, especially against a really game Mecha mercenary, who easily could have been blown sky high, working twice now. Been in back-to-back matches. Kudos to both guys. What'd you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of went over it. I think I agree with most of those points there. I think Mecha Mercenary kept up pretty well. I think the shock kind of finish with a move that isn't normally a finish made sense because of Mecha Mercenary being in his second match. And I thought that it was a good showing, especially for Mecha Mercenary, but also for Trevor.
And then we get Eric, we get the Ace Royal coming out. He cuts a money promo to finish the show. Thought his promo was awesome. What about you?
Yeah, loved it. I always love, I mean, I hearken back to it from a PWG angle that I always loved with, I think it was Joey Ryan refusing to allow Chris Hero to break his longest title streak. I loved it then. I love it now. It's something that always sticks in my head that I love for a guy to come out and say that, essentially just say, I'm not going to let you break my record. I want this title match, and I just think it's so cool. So I loved it here as well, especially coming from a guy who's definitely a better promo than Joey Ryan.
Yeah, for sure. Man, another easy thumbs up show, man. They just deliver. Flows by, and they just give us quality wrestling and with great characters, man. That's the thing. CWF does a great job. And some people just sometimes they watch wrestling in a bubble, and they don't get all the structure and watch the whole entire shows. They just watch big matches. Oh, this is a match of the year contender. This is this. But, man, wrestling's supposed to hit at you at an emotional level, and I think CWF does it better than anybody.
Yep, no question. And I think that me and you have, or maybe me, I like feel like I haven't been putting it over as much as I should, especially here on this show and in general, but I was thinking about it too the other day. I mean, CWF is still easily the best wrestling television show every week. I don't keep saying it all the time because you don't want to feel like you're repeating yourself constantly, but it still really is.
Hey, I'm an old man, so I have no problem repeating myself.
Well, there we go. Perfect. Yeah, but I mean, it's just, how do you argue with this show being the best show that there is? Like, unless you're just not watching it or you don't consider it a TV show because it's on the internet, maybe that's the problem with the Dave Meltzer's ratings or whatever. But, I mean, Jesus, this is just, it's so good.
Not enough flips for people. I mean, they work a style that is not, like, you know, it's not like as much love nowadays as a lot of people, because we're not doing, you know, junior heavyweights. We're not doing, you know, 8 billion flips, high spot fest. So it's a style that's built around stories and just good solid Southern work, and it's a style that maybe it's a style that I think it's a style that should always be in style, but to a lot of people I feel maybe it's like a style from the 80s and stuff that some people don't understand anymore or understand the psychology, which is possible.
To me, it's just wrestling. I mean, I don't see it as even a style. It's just, this is just what wrestling is. But I totally get what you're saying. Some people may just not appreciate it because it feels maybe dated or something, but I don't see it.
Yeah, and I mean, because it might be dated, but it's a style. They don't treat it dated. They just, you know, they treat, make stuff logic. And if, and a lot of people just don't, you know, whatever. But let's move over to night two. And it opens up with Royal Wilkins versus Monster Montana Black. What'd you make of this, buddy?
I thought that Wilkins really made Black look like, I don't know, like he was Mark Henry or something. I mean, he bumped and sold for him, put him over huge. Black was definitely very game as being a big-time monster. But Wilkins, I mean, just everything he was doing, selling for the big man, he's all over the place. And then he has to get the win with the Nux and the distraction to even more put it over the top that he was kind of outdone by the big man. I thought that this was really well done. Montana Black, obviously still pretty green, hasn't gotten shown off too much, I don't think. I mean, I'm not super familiar with him, but I think this is a good way to start kind of making him seem like a possible contender.
Totally agree with you. I loved how difficulty Wilkins was having with his size. He was really putting that over. And you know, I really loved Monster Black's. I liked Black's match better with Kane from earlier in the year, but I felt Wilkins made him look like a real legit threat here and actually made Black look like a super, like he has a lot of upside. Like this guy could be a top of the guy heel, maybe later, maybe by next year, where, I mean, he looked agile and intimidating. He looked like he could really be a real big time ass kicker. And I thought Wilkins I thought Wilkins put him over. I mean, Wilkins won, but I thought Wilkins made him in even in a loss by making him more of a threat than he was coming into the match, which I think is really hard to do. Then we get a Snooty Fox video by our boy Johnny P. I thought it was fun, and I'm excited for more. But you know what? I feel Snooty's Fox charisma comes across bigger and larger in the ring than it does in a one-on-one setting. How do you feel about that?
Very similarly. I think that this, I won't say it completely zapped his aura, but I will say that it definitely made him feel like less of the kind of larger-than-life character that he feels like in-ring. Maybe that's good to humanize him somewhat so people can relate to him a little bit. But yeah, to me, I think it almost feels like two different people. It doesn't feel like the same guy.
Yeah, this is only part one, so we'll see more. I mean, I thought it was beautifully shot. And I liked getting to know him, but he just seemed a little low key, as he wasn't on, if that's what, you know, as opposed to being in the ring type of thing. It felt like it was like almost like one of these old shoot interviews where it was like talking to Hulk Hogan one-on-one as opposed to the Hulkster. Have you met Hulk Hogan before?
I have not had the pleasure of meeting Hulk Hogan or Terry Bollea.
Okay. I met him and he's totally low key when I met him and, you know, real soft spoken. But, you know, that's not Hulk Hogan in the ring, you know? And that's kind of how I felt with Snooty Fox here in a way. And then we got Slade Porter versus Cam Carter. What were your thoughts here?
It was interesting after seeing Slade Porter involved in the six-man no DQ match as a heel.
Yeah.
Then he's the kind of playing, I guess he's supposed to be, he's turning up the aggression here, but he's, you know, not quite heel. I thought Cam Carter looked great again. I'm getting pretty into Cam Carter as a kind of a quick-paced, high-flying, athletic guy. And just so everyone knows, I'm not using coded language because he's black by saying athletic. I just heard a podcast where they were going off about that the other day. So I don't want anyone to jump down my neck about that. He just is a really super athletic guy. Brings a lot of great action, you know, and just I thought it was pretty good. But it again, it was quick and it didn't light the world on fire. But I think it's definitely the most that I've cared about a Slade Porter match because I have not been super into him to this point. So I'd like to maybe see where they move forward with him. And if they start to take him a little bit more seriously, I might actually get into him more. Cam Carter obviously has a bright future.
Yeah, I felt like I want to see more of Cam. I want to see a little bit more explosiveness here, especially coming off the Andrews match where they just made him. They made him look like $1 million. And here, I don't want to say it felt like a step back, but it just wasn't at the same level, and it's tough to keep that momentum going. But I will say it's cool here to see El Party now doing commentary throughout the show. I love Cecil, don't get me wrong, and I definitely don't want to, but I like a change of pace here and there. And I thought Kane and CL Party had this brother-sister type of relationship where, you know, CL felt like just slapping the shit out of him. But I like the dynamic between them, too. What were you thought?
Oh, yeah, and I definitely like that, and I meant to point that out, so thank you for bringing it up, because I would have thought. But Kane pointed and mentioned that the last time he was in the ring with Slade Porter, it was in the Canoodle Cup, and he referred to Trip Cassidy as his dad, which I thought was great, playing off of that little promo that was in the back. It's just, it's another thing that goes into Kane Justice. The guy is just, even though he's a heel, you can see his real personality crack through a little bit, and he's a guy that I really think he's, you know, super funny, super smart, and that's probably why he's such a good heel, is that he's constantly thinking about his character, and even something dumb like that I really enjoy.
And then we get this Michael McAllister promo. Fuck, this was awesome. I thought it was really interesting. I felt it had this like aura of off the wall craziness, almost like Harvey Dent. It felt like he was like Harvey Dent in Two-Face, and he was like fighting on where he was going. I mean, I don't know where he's going right now. I don't, no idea, but I want to go on the ride with him. This is the most I've been interested in his character. I'm kind of glad they're delving into his psyche, you know, because I think this is an interesting character. What about you?
I really hate to say this because I am a fan of the Carnies, and I hate to even make the comparison because it just seems so, you know, shitty. But like when we were talking about that, their stuff felt like it was inspired by Raven, Mick Foley in their promo stuff. Like Michael McAllister felt similar, but didn't feel inspired by that stuff. Yes. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It felt raw and natural.
Yeah. It had that emotion without feeling derivative. And I think you're so right. Like, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I know that Michael McAllister has been a big part of CWF for a long time. I have not been watching CWF long enough, and I haven't gone back to pick everything up, but he really felt important here. I guess this whole time I didn't realize that the reason why he's such a big deal is he's just a great talker or something, or if it's just that comfortability that's come with being in the company for so long. But yeah, the emotion came through, the presentation felt real, it's interesting, it really kind of sucks you in, and it's just kind of shocking when it's coming from this guy who doesn't come across like an over-the-top character. He just came across like a real guy.
Yeah, I loved it though, and you know, as him, we never got to hear him talk, so this is tremendous stuff. What do you think of Skylar and then Kincaid, man?
This was worked. You talked about earlier the kind of house show special. I think it was the Kincaid versus Chip Day. Here, this felt like the epic main event. I mean, this went super long, great back and forth. Great selling back and forth. Loved the heel work from Skylar the whole way. I've heard people who I respect their opinion talk about how they don't really like Skylar that much. I don't fucking get it. This guy super great, brings a lot of storytelling and emotion to his matches, always in the right spot, huge teases, but doesn't have to go over the top with crazy moves. Even for a guy his size, he can work a really grounded, safe, sane style that comes across legit. And with all that said as well, I loved the finish. The Southern Salvation countered into the stunner, I thought was such a cool spot to pull off as putting him away for the end. Really loved this. Really made it feel like the title was super important. Both guys really just giving it their all in this match. And I was, in some ways, I was almost shocked at just how good this match really was.
You know, I gave it 4 stars. And, you know, I think sometimes with Skyler, I think he gets lumped together and compared to Hollis a lot. And I like Hollis more than Skyler, so I think maybe sometimes people, they can't say they're both good. You know, one, I think Hollis is better, so sometimes people might, because he's better, therefore he's not good. I don't think that's the case at all. I just happen to like Hollis more, because they're just two guys who have like been, you know, they feud, tagged, and they feud. I mean, they work each other a lot, so I think that might have something to do with it, maybe. But I thought this, loved this match. Like I said, 4 stars, like Kincaid's on the arm. Skyler headbutts the wrist lock. I thought that was a neat little way. Love Skyler kept going back to the working the back. I loved it. I loved how they laid out the finish, where they had a lot of credible finishes and a lot of good kickouts, but nothing felt spammy or over the top at all, where it felt like they could win. So you played into the near fall. But you could also buy them kicking out where it wasn't over the top, like you're kicking out of, you know, a Canadian destroyer, for example, or 4 rolling German suplexes. I don't want to say the perfect match, but it felt, the structure was so well done. It was perfectly executed, and the layout was perfect in the sense that they gave you everything, but not everything, if that makes any sense what I'm saying. It was just so, so well done and structured. And this might have been one of my favorite Kincaid matches I've ever seen. I've seen Skyler have a couple other better ones. But this is where I thought this was like the best of Kincaid and the best of Skyler, and they meshed together. And where you got Kincaid's innovative type of stuff with meshing with Skyler's old school sensibilities, and you got this thing that came out, which was it's like Reese's peanut butter cups. You put your chocolate in my peanut butter. No, that's my peanut butter in your chocolate. And what, either way, it tastes damn good. And that's what we got here. Which leads us to the main event of the Dawsons and Anderson versus the Sandwich Squad and Chad Sterling. What were your thoughts here?
It was interesting. It felt like this was the descending action after the main event had already happened. Obviously.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Not to say that it was bad or anything, but just it was definitely kind of cool down and then add into some angle work. I really did like the comparison with the titles, them having the titles and them having the cups. I think that did good to kind of tease this out. I also liked that you're using this to set up the War Games match happening, I guess, on, they're saying, this Saturday. I don't know if they I don't know what they're doing. They're like plugging it in real time, or they're not doing, I don't think they're doing a special Saturday release of a special show. Or when it's going to be on the actual YouTube show. But either way, I did like that they're setting it up based on this. And that we talked about it last week, or maybe it was the week before. Or actually, I should say, we talked about it weeks ago, because it was when we did the podcast last. That when Sterling won the cup, it felt like there was the tease with Trevor being out there on the ramp with him, or in the ring with him celebrating. But here, because, you know, he does have the Weaver Cup, but, you know, I don't know the rules exactly, but it's like, it felt like, oh, maybe he's going to use it to challenge for CW Anderson's belt, because they are going, you know, belt versus cup and standing face to face against each other there. So I liked that, in that it was putting a little wrinkle, because then you're like questioning, what's he going to do with his title shot? And then having that play into Rick Converse coming out, obviously continuing his field with C.W. Anderson, it makes even more questions. It's like, okay, so what is actually going on here? So I really enjoyed it for storyline purposes. I think that the match itself, the work itself was really great. So yeah, I enjoyed this through and through. I think this is the stuff we talk about with CWF, man. They delivered with a really great kind of semi-main event when it came to work rate, and then they top off the cherry of the show with some angles to get you hooked for next week for the big War Games match.
Yeah, I love the early part of this match. I thought the shine was really great. And then you see Chet Sterling bouncing off Merch Mecca on the pileup, which is great because he's jumping on the back of these two hosses and he just bounces off like he hits flubber and bounces off just because they're just too much of a man for Sterling's weight. I love the cutoff to get the heat on Sterling. I love the heat was really solid, well done. Hot tug and then finishing run was good. And then we get we have Converse and Chet eye to eye. Really good stuff. I really good. I got this 3.25 star tag. Another strong episode, man. What about you?
Yeah, right there with you. Best wrestling show that there is on the planet. Just love everything about CWF.
And, man, before we take a break, just one more plug. CWF FanCon. Follow them on Twitter. October 13th and 14th, the CWF Rumble. Trevor Lee defends his title at the Rumble, on the Rumble, during the Rumble. He could be number one. I mean, hell, if he's defending it, I'm assuming that might make him number one automatically, and he's going the whole way. I mean, we've seen the man go 90 minutes. We've seen the guy go long. I mean, this is not going to be anything new. This is Trevor freaking Lee. I can't wait to watch this live. It was on my bucket list this year to go to CWF live. I'm going to FanCon. I'm going to the Rumble. Come on, folks, meet me up there. We'll have some drinks, have a hell of a time, and by God, watch some great freaking wrestling. On that note, when we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back, and we're looking at some NXT action, and we get a recap of the Itami and Ono recaps that opens the show. You know, this time I felt like that was needed, while others sometimes it feels like it's overkill. But since we haven't, you know, really seen them in a while, and they didn't wrestle each other on the pay-per-view, I felt this was necessary to set up the main event for later on in the show. What about you?
I always like it, and I always point it out, but I agree with you that in this case, it really did feel completely necessary to do that. I oftentimes enjoy them actually plugging the main event of the show off the top like that, but here especially, I agree with you that it felt necessary.
Yep. Then we get Cien Almas versus Cedric Baroni, or Cesar Baroni. What were your thoughts here?
I mean, this was a decent, it really was just a redemption angle more than a match for Almas to kind of, oh, he's a new man now that he's got, what's her name? I can't even remember. Honestly, I can't
Thea Trinidad. Thea
Trinidad. I can't remember her gimmick name at all here, but yeah, that he's revenging his loss from last time. It really, yeah, like I said, this was an angle. People talk about, angles disguises matches or matches disguises angle or whatever. This was just an angle. It really did not have much importance as a match. That said, Bononi is, I think, a bona fide blue chip prospect, honestly, from the little bit that we've seen from him. I think that they're high on him, and I think that he's got the size and enough natural talent to, I think, put it together to where he can definitely do, turn something out here.
And then we get a Regal announcement. What are your thoughts here?
He's calling out the ROH crew, saying they have to stop jumping people. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, nice piece of business. Then we get a Drew interview, right?
Yes.
And, what do you think of this?
And, Drew is not 100%. I mean, he's definitely not on the level as Bobby Roode. Definitely doesn't... doesn't make his money off the charisma as a promo, but he definitely comes across real. You can buy into him. And part of what makes it work for him is that that he can back it up when it comes time in the ring. So it can make you kind of buy into the promos a little bit more.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him in a way because he's following such hot acts. It was kind of like how it was when Flair was NWA champion and they always tried to replace him, but they always went back to Flair because the guys after him just weren't ready to carry the load like Flair. Will it become wrestling? Will it become in promos and doing angles like you had Sting try to replace him? It never worked. Luger. I mean, they always were trying to always replace him back then. I mean, hell, Flair was still world champion in freaking 2000. I mean, when you think about it, there's just... and that's how I kind of feel here, where Drew just is tough because he just doesn't seem polished. But you're right, his promo felt real and earnest, and you believe him, but it's just a whole different character, what he's portraying, than what we're used to, which was Rude, a swarmy champ, and then before him he had, internet freaking love guy, Nakamura. You had a lot of people like Balor, they were loved, who was a terrible promo, but Joe was a great promo. So it's, like McIntyre, I think at this point might be a better worker than Joe, but Joe's really brought it in when he went to the main roster. So I don't want to say that with all 100% certainty.
And it's funny because I was just listening to the Kevin Sullivan show, and he actually talked about that same point with Ric Flair this week as they were talking about the logistics and the politics of booking the champion, and how essentially on top of the fact that Ric Flair outshone the other guys that they thought about or that they were going to put the belts on, on top of that, you could always count on Ric Flair to pop a house anywhere and to show up for everything. So, when Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the holidays were big deal booking days, you didn't want to have a champion like, let's say, Kerry Von Erich, who might flake out on you and not show up.
Yep, no, you're absolutely right. And then we got Lars Sullivan and his big ankle bracelet, knee brace for three men. It really wasn't about the match. It was more of a setup for the No Way Jose post-match. I thought it was a fun angle, and Lars, I thought his forearms looked pretty damn nasty to Jose, but No Way Jose is a big dude, and seeing him in with another monster, it's interesting. What about you?
Did you get the full version or the partial version?
I thought I got the full version.
Because I watched the partial version and didn't realize it until just recently, and then... haven't had the chance, never took the time to go back and watch it. But for me, I watch the version where Lars just starts fighting three guys and then it cuts away. and then they never go back and show the finish.
Maybe that happened to me too, and I really wasn't paying attention. I just wasn't expecting much, so I probably wasn't paying that much attention to this three-way squash.
Yeah, I mean, that version, honestly, the version that I watched, when I heard from other people about what the full version was like, I was like, oh, I'm fine with my version. I didn't need to see anything else from this. It was good, so that's part of why I never went back to check it out, because it cuts to the back to like a Sanity promo, and it doesn't finish out the angle or the match, but there wasn't much more to the match anyways.
Right, and then we get this Gargano interview, and, it is what it is. Then Sabatini and Moss interrupt, sets up a Moss match for next week. You know, I get no excitement for this whatsoever. It was a decent piece of business to set up a match, but I don't know. It's hard for me to get behind Moss and Sabatini, I'll tell you that. What about you?
Yeah, they've got so much going for them physically. They're both come across pretty comfortable in their own skin when it comes to their character work, but they're missing any kind of excitement. They just don't come across as stars.
They don't pop off the page.
Yeah.
Like Sabatini seemed more of a star in the behind the scenes videos they've done on him on when they did the NXT things, where he seemed driving his vet to the freaking shows and stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I definitely see that. He's
the opposite of Snooty Fox, in a way.
That's true. I think Moss might be an albatross around his neck, honestly, because I think that Moss just comes across to me as a black hole of charisma. As I said, he comes across comfortable. He comes across like he's not playing a character. He's just being himself, but he doesn't. There's nothing about him that draws you in.
And they've almost been there too long now where they've reached a level and you don't feel that they're ever going to go above that level.
Yeah, that's true as well. And they have that going against them because it's been so long since NXT has pushed a guy who wasn't seen as a, I hate to say indie darling, but a guy who has a...
Yeah, no, that's a fair, you can say it.
Yeah, so like them having been there a long time, them not really having big star power aura, and then like you said, they feel slotted because there's not a bright future for guys like them in NXT, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what what they developed it for originally, but it's turned into something completely now different because they need workers who can work now, you know, not guys. Originally it was there to develop the fill up the you know, to get ready people ready for the main roster and develop talent. Now it's more about not only do they have to do that, but they also have to be able to get people to pay to watch these guys wrestle. And watching green guys work, that's not going to happen. You need guys who can put on exciting performances like the indie darlings, you know?
Well, yeah, and they also have to make sure that they have a lot of guys in the company that draw the kind of fans that wear Bullet Club shirts so that Marty Scurll can sell more Hot Topic shirts because of people having the free advertisement seeing half the crowd wearing Bullet Club shirts. I mean, I'm in some ways I'm joking, but it really feels like that's who they're catering to, and it's so funny because I don't know if they've shown that conversion worked. I mean, Samoa Joe has been a really good example of someone who has converted to the main roster well, but for every Samoa Joe, there's, I don't know how many, I can't even think of who's, but like half the guys are just like floundering on the main.
Oh yeah, you look at the Ascension failures.
Right.
You can say, what's his name? The Fashion Police guy.
Yeah, Tyler Breeze, both of them, honestly.
Yeah, finally he's gotten over a little bit and found his role, but people thought of him more like, you know, intercontinental type or level type of guy. Finn Balor really hasn't gotten over to where, you know, people thought he was going to be the next heir apparent. He got hurt and it really stung him pretty good, you know. For every home run, there's a lot of singles or bunts or even strikeouts, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Then we got a Sonya Deville vignette. You know, for me, I don't know about your opinion here. Just way too much start and stops for her pushes. Like, we get it, and then we see it going, and then it gets stopped.
Yeah, I don't feel like she's building momentum.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really broken up that kind of side of the storytelling with her.
Then we get a recap of the Sanity angle, which is all right. And then which leads to a Sanity promo, which was, huh? I didn't understand this. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, is this where they're talking about that they only believe in chaos or whatever it is? It doesn't do anything for me. I'm starting to like Sanity more, but to stick with the same thing, for every home run that they hit, there's a strikeout right afterwards. They just another one. It's really interesting how spotty the booking or the not even just the booking, but just the level of achievement from a lot of the acts in NXT right now is kind of super spotty and not consistent.
Agreed. Then we get Zeta versus Seville. What do you think?
I think it's really stupid to throw Zeta to the wolves and use her as fodder to put over Sonya. I feel, again, I agree with you that Sonya just doesn't, she's just not working. And I think that, yeah, they should not be using someone who I think has potential in this regard.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, she's doing the gimmick of what's her name is doing right now in Mae Young, who's going to be the big star, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. I mean, I said,
even if she didn't have Ronda Rousey as her best friend, I still think she has a ton of upside. But having Ronda was there, it doesn't hurt, you know.
I said it from the beginning when they started using Sonya, though. I said they've got her as their replacement for Shayna because they are their version of Shayna because they think she's better looking, whatever, blah blah blah. And then, you know, it was like, oh, they're just not going to sign Shayna. They're going to use this girl as her. And then now they've signed Shayna, and now it's like, well, fuck, now what do you do with your replacement? It's kind of like having Demolition and then you sign the Road Warriors. What do you do with, you know, what do you do with Demolition now?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you end up firing them. and then we get a Regal's during a workout with the Progress Boys, and Ruby White walks in and wants a one-on-two, but Regal says no, she needs a partner. Okay, makes perfect sense. What'd you make of this?
I liked this tease of Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch as a tag team here.
Agreed.
Thought that they looked good together. I thought it's funny that he won't give her a handicap match on a show that had a 3-on-1 handicap match.
Yep.
And then when we'll get into it even more when we get to the next episode of NXT TV, it becomes even more ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think of Ono and Itami? Don't DQ.
These guys just killed it. I mean, great action from both guys back and forth. Big chops, big strikes, what you would expect. Ono showing off his speed for his size, his cutoffs with his power game as well. Itami looks just fantastic, violent, mean, nasty, big kicks, been working over Ono the whole way through. I mean, yeah, I thought that this was great. I thought that both guys really upped their stock, upped their game coming out of this, feel like big important stars. It is interesting to think of Ono as being used in this spot, because much like we're talking about Samoa Joe, I think he's a guy who comes up to the main roster and gets over instantly. He just can prove it in the ring every night if need be, but they just don't let him. So it's really interesting there. But yeah, I thought that these guys, I mean, they delivered just a top-notch main event. Lots of hard-hitting action. Just really good stuff from them.
Yeah, I thought it was a good 3.5-star match. Stiff bout. Love the roaring elbow into the chair. But what the heck was Hiro thinking the result would be? Of course you're going to hurt your elbow. I mean, whatever. Yeah, super stiff, athletic, fun match, man. I really enjoyed it. Then we get the big ceremony of Asuka relinquishing the belt. I really thought Asuka was really such a sweetheart here. But Ember coming out kind of overplayed as like an epic rivalry where I never really thought they got to that level. I mean, I thought her and Nikki Cross had a better feud than her and Ember Moon. That's my take. I never thought the one thing about Asuka, she finally made Moon finally in that last match in a way. But honestly, the one thing about Asuka is I don't think she made anybody in her entire run in NXT.
I've agreed with you on that point before. I don't think that she did anything to put anyone over, except for maybe, as you talk about Cross, she kind of helped legitimize Cross as a singles wrestler and not just part of the Sanity stable. But realistically, she didn't do much to make anyone. And you could put a lot of that on Cross as well. I mean, it wasn't, I think she would have really proven herself. It didn't really matter who. She just needed the chance to get out there. It wasn't necessarily because of Asuka. So I agree with you on that. I agree with you on the Ember Moon thing. I mean, they didn't tell me anything in here to show that there was this connection between the two, that there was this rivalry or friendship or respect or anything that would make this make sense. But I think that they just want to have these moments and they want to manufacture this emotion to make it feel like we're peeling back the curtain and it's the curtain call. What do you expect? It's Triple H and him and his buddies had to do this even though they were in Madison Square Garden. And, you know, there's all those stories about if they were shitting on the home office or not, or right. You know, that the boys in the back got offended, but they asked Vince and it was okay. And all this, it's just like, well, yeah, if you stop and think about it, it was at the time, it was kind of disrespectful to the wrestling business because everybody else has to go back and draw there and you just shit on it and said it was all fake. So yeah, I mean, obviously Triple H doesn't think that there's any problem with that. So he's going to possible make the same thing in his, you know, his little vanity promotion in Florida. But, I think this one felt super forced. This was an Emperor Has No Clothes situation. Like it really felt like, what are you doing here? You're just trying to pigeonhole this same thing over and over again, even when it doesn't make sense. That said, Asuka came across super likable, came across real. I couldn't believe how much it felt like she was over the fact that, like, she was kind of condescended to when she showed up in NXT, kind of treated like she was beneath the level that she should be at. Them acting like she needs to be in developmental was kind of a joke. She really felt genuine, like she did not have any of those feelings and that she just enjoyed her time there, which I found very interesting.
Same here. I totally agree with you there. And that was NXT, folks. Again, like NXT lately, a lot of good stuff, some bad stuff, but overall, a fun journey at least. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, this didn't really have anything with the ROH guys on the episode, except for the kind of Regal talking about them, but their presence is still looming overhead. The new champion, I hate to say it feels like failure to launch, but it's not necessarily feeling like a big deal to start out, but we'll see where they go with that. But for all in all, I feel like NXT is on an uptick, so it's worth the watch every episode, I think. And coming out of it, you're kind of feeling excited for what's to come.
Yep. And then we open up next week, and we get right off the bat, we get the Mean Girls versus Ruby Riott and no one.
Yep.
And this opening, like you were talking about, defies Regal's edict and logic. Don't buy, and I honestly don't buy Nikki Cross teaming with Ruby Riott. I will say that. But I thought it needed more build. Like when Dusty and Flair teamed together as epic enemies. And I'm not comparing these two to Dusty and Rick, okay? But they're enemies, okay? They did all these vignettes, and you got to tag with me. Or when Lawler would try to find a partner, he would go to just one of his enemies. I mean, this took weeks and weeks and weeks of vignettes to get over, and it was entertaining television. Here, it didn't, like, it was just there, but I can at least buy the fact that Nikki Cross just shows up, tags in, cleans house, and then leaves. So at least it was that, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like she just showed up, tagged with her just for the shits and grins and continued the tag match. She just tagged in, kicked ass, and left. So I'm like, okay, it's just a different type of storytelling. I get it. But still, Regal should have been out immediately and said no. I mean, that's how it was set up. And you made Regal look like a puss. You ripped Regal's balls off as your authority figure in a way. I'm assuming I'm kind of hitting a lot what you were going
to
say.
Oh, yeah. And on top of it all, they had to replay the angle before the match. So they couldn't even play it off like it didn't happen. That Regal didn't say that, you know. But one thing I wanted to point out, I don't know if you noticed, I think it was Morrow. He referred to them as NXT's answer to the Mean Girls. So
I did hear that, yeah.
Seems like someone might be listening to Pete's NXT reviews on This Week in Wrestling. I'm just going to say it. I know Morrow has, you know, openly talked about being a wrestling podcast fan back in the day, so I wouldn't be shocked. But yeah, that said, the angle of the match, everything was good, but you gotta get on the same page with this stuff. I talked about the consistency of the booking. It's gone downhill, and it does fly in the face of the legitimacy of the product when you have stuff like this happen.
Now, you hear about the Mean Girls, how people think they should be moved up to the roster. They kind of got stale in NXT. That's the thing. Unless they're going to go with a female tag division, I don't think there's been any reason for them to be on the main roster because they're not good enough.
Yeah, I don't...
What do you think?
I feel like...
Their act works as a pair, but they're not... Neither one of them are good enough singles workers to work on top in the women's division. So I think you need to do with the tag division. And I think there's enough talent of girls to have a decent enough tag division. It might be tough, but I think there's enough talent out there who could still be there.
Yeah, I think it could be done. I just don't know that they will do it well.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I don't think when you have Emma, Dana, Summer Rae, I mean, obviously she's not at the same league as them as wrestlers, but I mean, she might even be a similar league wrestling wise to the Iconic. You've got those three girls all not really being used. You don't even see them on TV. You got Alicia Fox, who's, you know, arm candy or whatever for 205 Live. You got so many girls already on the main roster not being used, or not being used properly. Why do you think that we need to put more up there because they're stale in NXT? Like, they're not going to be any fresher on the main roster. They're not going to be used any better on the main roster. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me, honestly.
Yeah, to me, I would put the tag, only have one set of tag belts, like the men have one, and then put the cruiserweight on that side, and then go with all the women on one side of the thing. So you have one woman's belt and one woman's tag belt. And I think that could fit up some of your problems. But you'd actually have to go all in on the women's, really go all in, because that means you're going for at least a minimum of two female matches every show.
Yeah, and I think that already right now there should be more than that, honestly. But
yeah,
I think that would be the start, is that you'd have to have just a minimum.
And it also would help keep people from getting stale in singles, you know. Like, you know, you have like Becky Lynch, she's not even stale, but they've just buried her. We can bring her in the tag division and make her mean something, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's
They have enough talent. Because there's a lot of talent sitting on the bench right now in the women's division who aren't even getting an opportunity on their TV because there's just not enough spots. But now if you make all the tag teams in one side, move all the females on one side, then you can be able to tell more stories with all the females.
Yeah, no, totally.
And keep things fresh, too. Freshen them up by different opponents and all that stuff, but what have you. What do you think of the No Way Jose interview?
No Way Jose has just got a lot of personality. Great, believable baby face. And yeah, I'm excited for him moving forward. I think it's been interesting that he's been gone. I think he really has everything you could want in a talent. I think he's a guy that could be used a lot better. I honestly think he's another one that I say. I mean, because NXT doesn't have this kind of current track record of pushing non-super indie talent, he's getting lost in the shuffle when I think he's a guy who could be at the top of the card.
Yeah, he's enough charisma, hell. Again, I've gone broken enough record about him and Rich Swann as a tag team. They easily could have replaced the Enzo and Cass now that they're not on the, you know, they've split up. They could be that lovable babyface tag team, and, you know, and who could get, and people get behind them because they love them. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just a podcaster. That leads us to Johnny Wrestling versus Riddick Moss. What were your thoughts here?
I think that Johnny made Riddick Moss look really good. I think that him selling for Moss made Moss come across like a believable big bully. I think that Moss served his role fine. He was in the correct spots. He didn't come across like he's any, you know, great shakes or nothing. But I think that Johnny really did a good job of helping put him over. Super dynamic finish. I think that the slingshot spears setting up the finish, I think was really good. And I enjoyed this match for Johnny selling and his underdog babyface work.
Yeah, totally agree. I think you hit everything well. I liked Moss as the mauler here, and I thought it was a good, solid match. Gargano was great as the glue here, and again, he was great working underneath. I'm not sure, because it felt like on commentary they were going with the Johnny doubting himself storyline, so I'm not sure about the doubting himself potential angle. We'll see where it goes, but I'm not a big fan of babyfaces not having confidence. For me, that's no buys, but we'll see where it goes. And then, hey, we get a Street Profit video. Oh, hey, now we have a Street Profit match. We don't need that shit, okay? We saw the damn video, what they're doing. They showed us the entrance of what they were about to see again, right?
Yeah, I know. It's just, they love it. I think especially with these guys, they love it because they want to show off their Snapchat filters.
Fuck. I'm sorry for the cursing. Unbelievable. People are saying how the Street Boxers are going to get so over. Well, if you show them enough damn videos, probably not, because they're going to get fed up with them quicker. We get Street Profits with the Ely brothers. The Ely brothers must be green as grass if two jacked up brothers, and by brothers I'm talking brothers, like
twin brothers,
like yes, who look like that and can't get a big push. They must be green as grass. Profits look fun, but are they good? I haven't been able to find out yet. Are they good? Because I haven't seen anything that says, wow, they're really good in their matches. They seem like a fun tag team. But when we're talking fun tag teams, I'll go back and whine a little bit more. I'd rather see No Way Jose and Swanee. I think they're funner, more fun than the Street Profits. What do you think of this match?
I think I pretty much agree with everything you say there. I was literally going to make a very similar point. I think the Street Profits did what they did here, but they, like, I'm with you. I can't tell. Are they any good? Are they actually, like, people keep telling me they're over. Oh, they're so fun. They're dynamic. Oh, Dawkins' dropkick looks great. I'm just like, really? Like, really? Are they good? I'm not super into anything about them. I guess they serve their role well. People like memes. People like that they're Snapchat. I'm not into Snapchat, so I don't get it as much. I don't care about it. But yeah, it's just not my thing. That said, you talk about the Ely brothers. I think that they look great. I think that if they do, I hope that they debut this stable that they're doing with them. And I guess it's Brennan Williams. I guess they're calling him Marcellus Black. He was trained by Booker T. He was I think he was a professional football player. Yeah, he played for the Texans, played for the Jaguars, and played for the Patriots, but he was only on the practice squad for the Patriots. He got trained by Booker T. I think he might be the first big breakout star to come out of Booker T's training academy. Perfect time for him. I think with him and the Ely brothers, that could be a great stable because he's got a lot of personality, decent worker. Not, you know, he's not amazing, but he's pretty good, stands out. So I'm just like, yeah, I think the Ely brothers are going to work well in that, but in this spot, I don't think it makes any sense to keep using them just to job out to teams that I don't know if they even have potential. I really don't even know what the Street Profits are supposed to be, honestly.
Yeah, I still don't understand the stirring thing. What the hell is that?
They're stirring it up. They are stirring it up.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. I don't know what they're stirring up. It's like, what are they supposed to be? I could get behind if they're supposed to be social media trolls, but they don't tell me that story, you know?
Yeah, and I'm utterly confused. And I don't follow them on Twitter, so. We got a recap of Asuka leaving NXT, which morphed into more of a profile piece, which led us to Regal, and he has to think about what he's going to do with the women's belt. Wow, that was great.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of thinking to do. He's not sure. I mean, there is obviously a women's tournament that's happening at the same time, but those two things must not be related in Regal's mind in any way. So, yeah, got to figure out what to do with this belt.
And then we get Pete Dunne versus Wolfgang, and we get both guys do, like, little interviews before the match. Wolfgang does. Dunne just does his Peter thing. Well, what you make of the match and the interview? I don't even think you need to talk about the interviews. What do you think of the match?
I liked Wolfgang's promo as a kind of salt of the earth guy promo. Dunn just doesn't even acknowledge the interviewer and walks away. The match itself, obviously, I think Dunn's arm work is great. I think Wolfgang is a great big man who can sell, big man who can move, big man who can fly. For an ICW guy, I think I should have been paying attention to Wolfgang, but because I didn't pay attention to ICW, I just never really saw him. But he's actually really good. Pete Dunne with the digit manipulation, he's getting into great shape. He's just, the pendulum DDT, everything that he does in this match, the DDT, the pendulum kind of swinging over DDT on the apron looked great. I mean, I think Pete Dunne, I had him in my top five wrestlers last year. I think, unfortunately, this year, he probably doesn't even make my top 10. And it's just, even though he's actually had better matches this year than anything that he had last year, it's like this NXT stop start, UK title, British strong style, shitty trios matches have really affected his consistency and his output. And it really sucks because I think he's actually gotten even better. And you can see it in a match here. I mean, just great stuff. They do a lot of the tropes that I hate in indie wrestling, but it works pretty well here because they do continue the storyline with the arm work and the selling, and they kind of hit everything. It's like, this is what modern wrestling can be. This is what, when you see 1,000 guys who just do flips back and forth and high spots, this is what they should be striving for, is being able to use those flips and use that athleticism to also tell me a great story with a lot of drama. I loved the Howley getting caught into the armbar. Such a cool spot. Love the finish with Pete Dunne finishing him off with the bitter end after a really big time fight back and forth. I just think that you keep having title matches like this and you start to think of the UK title as being more important than half the belts on the main roster, honestly.
Yeah, I enjoyed this match, but I really liked the first half more than the second half. But I really did enjoy it. I thought Dunne was really a great glue here, holding the match together. But Wolfgang was awesome in his comebacks and his high spots, and they really matter. They built them to him really well. And that leads us to Cole and Fish and O'Reilly attacking. First they attack Dunne, and Wolfgang saves them. And then that piece of shit Dunne runs off, but he teases coming back to get his belt. They think he's coming back for the save, but he's not. He's grabbing his belt. I thought that was funny. I'm all in on this little. I can get all in on this little UK versus the Ring of Honor boy feud. I can buy into that. I think it's new, fresh, and exciting. What about you?
Yeah, and as someone who was just shitting on the British Strong Style Trios matches, I think in an NXT setting and with replacing Pete Dunne with Wolfgang, I think that sounds like a lot of fun, honestly.
Agreed. It'd be a good way to get these guys. I'm assuming the UK guys will be doing the job, though. But either way, I think it's a few that can help both guys get over in certain ways. And I think that's why they'll keep Dunne away from it, because I think they think Dunne is the man out of the group. I really enjoyed this show. I liked this show better than last week's, I think, because I liked how it ended and set up stuff for the future. What about you?
Yeah, I am right there with you. I think that this episode was much better. I think that this episode brought a lot more depth. It had a good finish to leave you on a cliffhanger wanting to see more. And I'm excited for, again, as I talked about last week as well, with no kind of real interaction with the ROH guys here. Now you have it, and you're excited. I'm excited to see where they're going. I want to, more of this, teasing this trios match to be the first match for the ROH guys. I think seems like it could be pretty good.
Awesome. Tim, anything you got to plug?
So I was on Burning Spirits. I talked about it earlier. This Week in Wrestling is this show that I'm on right now. I always plug that. I've been plugging Greetings from Allentown. I think it's probably the best podcast on the PTBN PWO feed other than this one in Worldcast. Let's see what else. I think Lucha Undead is still a really good podcast. Got some big guests coming in the future. Had a great episode with Maxwell. Had a Top Beer episode, should be coming out this week, that was really good. So but you can always find everything that I'm doing if you just follow me on Twitter @LuchaUndead.
Yeah, follow me at Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Remember, CWF FanCon, October 13th, 14th. See Trevor Lee defend the CWF Mid-Atlantic title in the Rumble. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a happening. Come out and support CWF Mid-Atlantic at the FanCon, October 13th and 14th. I'll see you there. Follow me on Titans at Titans of Wrestling. And, yeah, hell yeah, listen to Worldcast and, of course, This Week in Wrestling. And everyone have a great week. Later.
White moon, Warren G was on the streets trying to consume some skirts for the E so I can get some phones rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweak. All of you skirts know what's up with 213.
So I hooked a left on 21 and Lewis, some brothers shooting dice, so I said, let's do this. I jumped out the rock and said, what's up? Some brothers pulled some gas, so I said, I'm stuck.
Since these girls peeping me, I'm gonna glide and swerve. These hookers looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix. Explode. Now I'm switching my mind back into freak mode. If you won't skirt, sit back and observe. I just left a gang of those over there on the curb.
Now they got the freaks and that's a known fact. Before I got jacked, I was on the same track. Back up, cause it's on N-A-T-E-N-E. The woman to the G.